Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Napa Know-How.
This month, Napa's got all kinds of motor oil deals that can save you some serious cash. Like a 5-quart jug of Napa Full Synthetic Motor Oil for just $16.49. With savings like that, you may start feeling like a VIP. But don't let it go to your head. These oil deals are for everyone. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa Know-How.
Napa Know-How.
General States pricing. Sales prices not include applicable state local taxes or recycling fees. Offer ends 8/31/20.
That little Chico Pitbull, Mr. 305, better said Mr. Worldwide. You already know what it is. Listen to my new podcast, From Negative to Positive. Subscribe today. Now, part of the things that we're doing over here at Negative to Positive is encouraging people to change their lives, change the things that are within their power. I want to thank our good friends at KFC for helping me bring this to you. Feed your whole crew with KFC. Let's go. I can get the KFC bucket of chicken, and you know, that's fire. Now, Babu, you know that you could get that mac and cheese, that mashed potato, gravy, those biscuits. Now that's trouble right there. That is fire right there. You know, on Negative to Positive, we always talking about striving and achievement. And the Colonel Sanders story is a story that inspired me since I was 10 years old. Look how our life comes full circle. Now I'm talking about Colonel Sanders and Kentucky Fried Chicken and how much I love it. Listen to my new podcast, From Negative to Positive. Check out the vodcast. Subscribe today. Apple Podcast, Podcast One, Spotify.
Hey, Collider Live fans, Cody here, and by now you've likely heard about Disney Plus, the new streaming service that includes Disney, Pixar, Marvel, Star Wars, and National Geographic. With all these amazing brands in one place, Disney Plus has one of the most incredible libraries in the entire streaming landscape, and it's all ad-free. From beloved classics like Snow White and the Seven Dwarves to today's blockbusters like Captain Marvel and Avengers Endgame to a critically acclaimed documentaries like National Geographic's Free Solo, the content on Disney Plus is truly unparalleled. Disney Plus also offers some of the most beloved TV shows of all time, including 30 seasons of the Emmy Award-winning animated series The Simpsons. And if that weren't enough, Disney Plus has also rolled out a host of originals like The Mandalorian, the first ever Star Wars live-action series, and High School Musical, the musical, the series, a very meta take on the beloved film franchise. It's no wonder Disney Plus has become one of the most talked about streaming services of 2019, so don't miss out. Sign up for Disney Plus now and start streaming all of this great content today.
Napa Know-How.
This month, Napa's got all kinds of motor oil deals that can save you some serious cash. Like a 5-quart jug of Napa Full Synthetic Motor Oil for just $16.49. With savings like that, you may start feeling like a VIP. But don't let it go to your head. These oil deals are for everyone. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa Know-How.
Napa Know-How.
General States pricing. Sales prices not include applicable state local taxes or recycling fees. Offer ends 8/31/20.
It's that little Chico Pitbull, Mr. 305, better said Mr. Worldwide, and I'm here to tell you about my new podcast, From Negative to Positive, brought to you by my friends over at State Farm. I believe that to have success, you got to play the game, so that the game doesn't play you. You know, the biggest risk you take is not taking one. It's very important that you make sure that you make the most out of your money, especially when it comes to insurance. State Farm offers surprisingly great rates. They have great agents standing by helping you personalize your coverage. All this is backed up by award-winning, easy-to-use technology. It's a great price with an even greater service. When you want the real deal, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Welcome back to Collider Live, the best show on the damn YouTubes. I'm Rocky Stryer, across from the most evil one, Dorina.
Buenos dias. Good morning, everyone. Happy Tuesday. Happy to be here with my four favorites, Cody in the booth.
Oh, when you said it, it made me remember that it was Tuesday.
Is it Tuesday? I don't even know. I just said it.
Mark Riley, is it Tuesday, our producer?
It's Tuesday. It is Tuesday, and it's December 10th.
You learn something new every day.
Every day we got some news for you.
John Rocha in the house.
Hello.
Hello, sir.
Hey, Rocha. I got this yesterday. I ordered online. It's from the Banana Republic factory. Well, is it a nice design? I hate ordering clothes online.
I was going to ask if you went shopping at Abercrombie & Fitch.
Ah. All right, works. Then I'm all right with it.
I don't feel that way, but I dig it a lot. And you and Riley sitting next to each other, you're in the same color scheme.
That's right.
Hey. You got a thing going on.
I'm going to go chop wood later.
It's like a bromance thing.
I do a bromance with
Yeah, I got a bromance with this guy. Oh, look at that.
Also nice.
Caressing
are
the
you
face.
Are you trying to be a lumbersexual?
A lumbersexual? I don't.
What the fuck is a lumbersexual?
Yeah. Two good points.
Yeah, holy
like
shit.
I don't judge the truth. Have you not heard about that? I heard somebody. It's not mine. I just heard somebody say it. It's like when you look like Paul Bunyan, but you're hot.
You want to know what? I think I dig that. I want to be on that dating app.
Yeah. It probably exists.
Also, Roka, I noticed your throne looking lovely as ever.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. What is it that I texted you the other day? Somebody commented, I want to see a biopic on John Roka's chair.
Yeah.
I love it.
The life of a John Roka chair. Cody Hall in the booth.
Hey.
How we all doing?
Hi, Cody.
I think we're doing weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's Tuesday.
It is Tuesday.
Feels off. But, I mean, in a good way.
Tuesday.
Cody, I really love that you're on the show, but I hate that we can't see you.
I love it.
I see him in
my
mind.
I like to avoid eye contact as much as possible, so this is great.
I also watch back a ton and see all the things Cody does to us, and I am so mad at every single one of them, but it's too good to be mad at.
Yeah, you just have to accept
struggle.
It. Yeah.
Yeah, he shits on all of us. I mean, he's no prisoner.
Cody shits on all of us?
Oh, yeah.
Are you unaware?
Did you not
know
that?
Oh, God.
You patient zero mother effer. What the hell are you saying about me?
Don't start with that shit. Oh, you got this narrative. I got you sick, John.
You got everybody in the office sick. Now my girlfriend's homesick. Wendy's homesick. I hope you're happy for yourself.
Right. I'm the one who caused all of Los Angeles to get sick, John.
Did you just call her not my girlfriend's homesick?
I said now my girlfriend.
Oh, now.
You know my throat's feeling a little funny. I blame you. Are you the monkey from Outbreak?
No, it was Ken, actually. I think Knapsack's patient zero passed.
Oh, I thought it was me, John.
Hold on. I have such a bone to pick with this entire thing. Because for my whole life, if somebody is sick, I go hug them. Mm-hmm. When you are sick, you need love. You need affection. You need attention. You need to be taken care of. Number one. Number two, I could just as easily get sick at the grocery store as if I'm talking to you.
That's true.
We have no idea where we get sick from. When people go up to people and like, you got me sick. What the are you a scientist? Did you examine their germs and then your own germs and then present them the DNA test?
Yes, trust me, ma'am. That's I'm a scientist.
I put it in the petri dish and
I
looked at it.
Fell off the train.
The DNA made you leave? You hopped train there?
I was like, I'll get off at
just
this stop.
Just in general,
now.
I can't stand that. Like, if I'm sick and everybody around me is like, oh. It's like, motherfucker, if I'm sick, I'm washing my hands. I'm Purelling. I'm not coughing on you. I'm keeping my own business. Let me come into work.
But
let
it's
me do
air.
My job.
But it's
your air.
Yes.
We share the air.
But then what if you come and hug me and then I breathe on you and you get sick?
This drives me mad. So what if I go to the grocery store and I pick up a box of cereal that somebody who just licked their hand touched?
How many people do you think do that?
Was that a joyful?
A lot?
It was more like a understood. I don't know who licks their hand and touches it.
Not on purpose. But like, you know, they're babies and stuff. You ever seen a baby go in a grocery store? You think that they're not spreading their germs? They're like,
everywhere.
I've seen a baby lick their hand and grab Frosted Flakes. So yeah.
Yes. I mean, isn't that why Cody got sick, Cody?
From my baby?
Yeah.
Oh,
you blame the baby?
So Cody's baby got the entire collider
kid,
office.
You want to do that? You want to blame a 3-month-old?
You're blaming him. I'm not blaming him. I love your kid. He's your president of the United States.
The whole thing is so stupid. It's so stupid.
You know what's not stupid?
Like, you think Cody's body invented the sickness? Cody's body, like, grew the illness inside him. He's patient zero. Inside him, his body was like, yeah, you know what we're going to do today? We're going to get ill. Get everybody motherfucking sick.
I'd like to.
There's no way. He went somewhere.
You don't think he's an evil genius, though?
Yes, I do think that.
There you go.
But just not in this way.
Yeah, this could be a long play by Cody Hall here.
Oh, yeah.
Just to wipe out the office.
Patient zero is a term we call ball busting amongst friends. Oh. I don't understand that you. I get your point, though. I get your point. People take it too seriously.
I hate.
Are you the person that says people should stay home when they're sick?
No.
Okay.
No.
Yeah, because you were saying, let me come in and do work. Because especially
you. In 10 years, I have not taken one sick day. Wow. 10 years. I've never called out sick.
Oh, good for you.
My God, Cody, I was so with you there.
Meanwhile, everyone else around her is called out sick because she's come in sick, gotten them sick, and they've
And then
home.
They shouldn't call out.
But is it because
your job?
But is it because you're young, though?
Oh, good point.
Maybe. What, because I'm young?
Because you have, like, a better immune system than the rest of us old fuckers.
My immune system is shit.
No.
It's because you don't sleep.
Yeah, I have no.
Oh, that's true.
Basically,
or
no
fart.
Immune system. It's gone. Yeah. Do you think farting helps your immune system?
Maybe.
Yeah, you gotta,
it's gotta
you
be
release
healthy
that
for
shit.
You
guess. Release it. Yeah, like that.
You guys all agree on something that I feel like isn't true.
It just makes sense.
What's it like to be on the other side of that? Is it weird?
I live here.
This is where I live. I don't know what it's like to be on
your
side.
You're like, I've never been to the other side. This is the only thing I know.
No.
Great shirt, Roxy.
Thank you so much. I was just telling the guys that I got this from my dad because my dad doesn't believe in birthday or Hanukkah or any of those presents. But if I do something that makes him proud, he gets me a rocker tee.
Awesome.
Either like something from a concert he promoted or somebody gave it to him because that, like my Joan Jett one, she took it off herself and handed it to my dad because he was in that industry.
All my life,
starting the time I was like six. You didn't do anything to be born. What'd you do? What'd you do?
That's true. You just showed up. So we all just showed up in an annoying way.
This was a recent present.
Yeah. Speaking of rockers, Roxette.
Nice.
Has passed away.
Nice.
Which is sad because
she had transition. An amazing not day. Nice that she passed.
No.
No,
yeah.
Right. Nice transition.
Yes, yeah, so I was going to say.
Well, not full
nice.
Roxette, right? The female
in
Roxette.
Yes.
What's
her
name?
Marie
Fredrickson, 61 years old.
Yes.
Complications from a brain tumor from a few years ago.
Motherfucking brain tumors, man. We got to figure this shit out.
Hey, can you turn me up in the yellow? I can.
Yeah, I can.
Thank you.
But it's over.
Thank you so much.
How you doing?
I'm better now.
Mm. This is such a good song, you guys. We're going to karaoke the crap out of this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-oh.
Are you not coming?
You're not coming, Rox.
You mother.
Wait, is it Friday?
Yeah.
I'm still good. I'm still good.
Okay, I was like, what are you talking about?
I'm still good. I just remember I have work on Saturday night. Okay. Friday, I have work until about 9, and then I'll be there. When does it start?
9. Oh, I don't know.
Do you guys do that
8
on purpose?
Or 9? No.
While we're karaokeing. Rena Riley, Roca Roxy. Rena Riley, Roca Roxy.
Rena come on, Roxy. Come on, Roxy came up with a good
and
song.
Cody is also here.
Whoa.
Cody, we need to think of an R nickname for you.
Well,
he didn't want to even play that game.
I don't even know where to say.
Cody, just
to make my
silence.
Name into an R?
Yeah, like. Rakodi.
You understand my silence.
Rody.
Saraf the Corn in the chat is saying Roxy's the type of person who eat radish just so she can fart regularly.
Ooh.
So is that a thing?
Maybe you need to eat radishes.
Wait, is radish a fart machine?
Maybe.
Is that?
But if you've never tried it, you might as well.
I like radish.
Garlic is excellent.
Oh. I eat 3 cloves of garlic a day minimum.
That makes a lot
even
of sense.
Even if it means at the end of the day I haven't done it and I have to take a clove of garlic and eat it.
Do you do it in the morning?
Wait, what?
All the time. It's not good for the breath.
I was going to say.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah,
why? Does this explain a lot of things?
No, because it's incredible. Usually I'm very, like, my nose is, like, very sensitive
and
to garlic.
And you don't smell garlic?
Me too.
I've never smelled it on you.
Yeah,
I usually wait until later at night. But I am a huge believer that garlic solves all illness. Mm-hmm. Like, garlic is the jam.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
It
so
makes
much.
My stomach hurt, maybe because I'm a vampire. I don't know.
Do a ginger shot after.
Is that what I should do?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm going to try it.
Because I'm with you on the ginger shot. The ginger shot
but
every
you
morning.
You just said that. You can't say I'm with you on and then
no,
say
no,
a new
I'm with
thing
you.
That
Sorry.
Hasn't been presented.
I jumped ahead in the story. Hold on real quick. The garlic on a piece of toast, I was feeling sick. So this could be for everybody feeling sick.
Sure.
And they said put garlic, a clove of garlic, and like spread it on the toast. And I remember eating it and not getting sick. So I'm with you. That's what I'm saying. And then do the ginger shot to make your stomach
Riley
feel better.
Riley just went into his own little
Roxy,
wellness corner.
Follow.
Yeah, I followed.
If the garlic is making your stomach hurt,
mm-hmm.
it helps for your immune system.
Mm-hmm.
And then take the ginger shot after, and that'll settle your stomach.
Okay, I'm going to try that. And if it doesn't work, I'm going to text you a very strongly worded.
I'm sure. Hex.
No, those shots.
I'm going to hex you.
A very strongly worded hex.
Those shots like make I spend half of the money I make on shit like that.
Yeah.
Which is the dumbest thing of all time.
If
somebody tells me something will keep me healthy, I will fucking use it. Like,
wow.
Because of how many hours I'm working. If somebody's like, buy this thing and you won't get sick, I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Like a moron.
Okay.
I mean, I'm sure half the stuff I put into my body, it's like a placebo.
Do you have a juicer?
No.
Get a juicer.
Oh, my God.
Those are really expensive. And who has time for that?
Put
also,
on an Amazon wish list. You know, you got a camera last year for Christmas, so I'm sure you can probably get
that. Remember I cried my eyes out?
Yes. I do remember this.
That was crazy.
But the juicer is the greatest invention for us because then you don't have to spend $15 on a ginger shot. You get it fresh. You make it fresh every morning. You're welcome.
This is American stuff, man.
Yeah,
John and I are just like, we just take like Vicks, VicaRub, like for everything.
What's wrong with you people? Or your grandma shows up with some kind of leaves that she makes together out in the yard, and that totally fixes you.
Yo, that is a real thing. Oh, you're supposed to like put onions on your feet when you sleep and stuff.
Or if your throat hurts, you just take a tequila shot.
Yeah, a tequila shot. Yeah,
whiskey is better for the throat.
Do you do that too? I've done the.
What, you don't agree?
Is that what you do?
But you need the spiciness. Yeah. To get
your,
the
your whiskey content down every day. You're like, oh, I'm not feeling so hot. I'm gonna.
No, you do. Yeah. Warm up the whiskey.
Why
wouldn't shoot
you
it, though? And then do the lemon.
Exactly what you just said.
I love being drunk on a mountain in a hot tub.
I want that.
Let's go to a mountain and get drunk.
Alex. Oh, Alex isn't here, though.
Drunk.
Oh, you're being the sexy.
Drunk.
Yeah.
Drunk. Drunk. I miss being a drunk, man.
What?
Every time.
Drunk. Rox, no.
You don't miss that?
I don't miss.
You guys might not have ever been there.
I think we got pretty close.
Blacking out, though. I don't miss blacking out. I don't miss being an idiot. Like I'm an idiot now, but I'm more of an idiot drunk, so I try not to.
When I went home for my 10-year reunion, I reminded my girlfriend that at our 5-year that I punched her in the face.
That's nice.
Better times.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Memories.
But, so maybe it's good that you don't drink anymore as much like that.
Those were the days. Am I right, people? Am I right?
After the 20s in the military, I drank like a motherfucker.
What did you do? Yeah?
There are holes all over the South in walls from when I was in my
20s. What's drunk
the
Roka
South
like?
What?
Oh, now?
Yeah.
So fun, chill, relaxed, playful. 20s? When he was still angry at the world? Oh, man. Yeah.
Same and just a complete mess?
A mess. Like, I would get into fights. I would punch holes in walls. I remember ripping a door off a, like a screen door off a house.
Why
do
you think?
Fighting.
You turn into the fucking Hulk? What the hell, man?
I'm wearing this, too.
Yeah.
Why?
Back then, it was a lot of stuff I was negotiating with himself. Let's just stuff you when you're young. You got to work it out, you know?
Kid, yes!
There you go. That's it.
That's
my
sweetheart when he's drunk. He's
works great when he's drunk.
All of us are pretty good drunks now.
But not
when
before.
We're drinking. No, oh no. I'm in Roka's camp.
Yeah, you were also a mess.
Yeah, for sure. Now
Rox and
I'm always
got
fun.
Into it.
Yeah, oh yeah.
We would have ripped the paint off the wall.
Oh, for sure. For sure. But either together or apart.
Oh, fair. I always like someone on the team.
Yeah, you like a good teammate.
Yeah, yeah.
Speaking of teammates, you and I went and saw Jumanji last night.
Jumanji.
Oh, was it that good? Is that your review?
I would say I enjoyed it. Well, Rox, you're, you know.
I'm what?
You're the host of the show, please.
I want to hear from you because this is the thing. John and I have a tendency to sit near each other in screenings now. Like, either he'll be in front of me or I'll be in front of him. We usually sit one row from each other.
Why don't you sit next to each other?
Because we both like the aisles. Oh.
I don't think we're there yet. I think we're getting there. And I think everything is a process.
Wait, hold on.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Do you understand?
Not there. This was
what
this
you
was
just
a
did
Josh.
To our
you're
good friend, Roxy.
Yet.
Roxy, exactly. Your face.
You're acquaintances. You're not friends
yet. Yeah, no,
I think we're friends. I just think we're not sitting next to each other at a movie friends
we're
yet.
We're working on our friendship.
But we did it in Chapter 2. We
yeah,
did sit next
true.
To each other in Chapter
true.
2, which you were very kind to get me into.
We're, yeah,
and
we're
just
working
hit a
on
bump
that
in that friendship here.
No, John and I have had quite the road.
Wait, what needs to happen for you guys to sit together, John?
I think... Well, we're both like the aisle seats.
Yeah, that's the excuse that I gave.
Yes, that's correct.
But I think it would have to be a movie where we both like went to, and there was no plus one with us. Because she usually has a plus one.
Yeah.
I usually try to bring a plus one. So it's like if we show up at a screening, and I think if no one else is with us, I think we would actually sit next to each other.
I don't want to call out your plus one by name because some people know who it is. But why does your plus one always pretend that they don't know who I am?
Shannon. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't mind calling him out. That's kind of our
relationship. I mean, I've met him literally 5,000 times
at
every Comic Con, every time, and he goes to stick his hand out every time, and I'm like, motherfucker, why?
Oh, no. But he's just sticking his hand out.
He's just saying hello?
Yes. He knows who you are. Oh, he's very
he's just
well.
Shaking her hand.
Kalinowski tells him all kinds of stories about you all's relationship and friendship and stuff. So,
whoa.
I mean, friendship. You know, relationships are friendships. And so he knows about
Kalinowski.
Hope you're doing well. But yeah, so he knows all about you, and he's well aware of you. And so
he doesn't
likes
ever
you.
Seem
well
aware of
you.
Me.
Hmm.
Every time.
He's just very, like, he's one of those introverts.
So anyway.
So Jumanji.
We did. We went and saw Jumanji. And the point of what I was trying to say before John said we're not close is that I always try to gauge John's reaction during the movie. And I found out he tries to gauge mine, too, because we're both very, very vocal people in life. So theoretically, you should know how we're feeling about a movie while we're watching it. Because if John likes a movie, he is not in a bad way, but loud during it. Either laughing or, oh, whatever it is. And same. I do the exact same thing where I'm vocal. Mm-hmm. Not shouting sentences or anything. And I will say, yesterday, you were laughing quite a bit during Jumanji.
Yeah, I thought it was really funny. I enjoyed it. Not as good as the first movie, absolutely, but I thought some of the changes they made were interesting to explore. I thought the gimmick they used kind of started to drag in the middle, but then right when it was getting to be dragging too much, they adjusted and fixed it, and then it was fine for the rest of the movie.
I agree with that adjustment. Ooh, I was really happy they altered something because I was feeling a little like, okay, and then wha-bam, and I was back in. So I'm with you.
My only real negative is that they presented some emotional stuff between the friends that they kind of wrapped up too quickly and too easily, which could have been explored a little bit more. Like Alex, they give Alex Wolff a little bit more to do in terms of like his journey of being like depressed. Out of the four friends, he's kind of not happy with how things have gone in his life since the last Jumanji. So I would have liked to have seen them explore that more, a little bit more. But that's my only real complaint. Other than that, I thoroughly enjoyed it. And there were some really touching scenes between the actors playing Danny DeVito and
Danny Glover.
So,
do you wish that this was a summer movie?
I think it actually, that's a great point. Where I hadn't thought of it at all. Totally belongs in the summer with the way it was presented.
Okay. Yeah.
So absolutely. It was released a little too late in the year.
I think it's really fun. I had a great time watching it. There was nothing about it that made me annoyed, frustrated, angry.
Or wanting it to end.
It was fun. But I just kept thinking, I wish that this was a summer night and I had come in and it was just a different atmosphere because it feels like a strange release time for what they showed.
They're capitalizing on what they did last time.
Yeah.
I mean, it came out the same year as Last Jedi and surprised everybody with how well it did. So I can see why they put it out.
I really liked the first one. Yeah. You liked the first one
as well?
I
do. I mean, I was at the junket for it in Hawaii, and I remember them saying, and I've said this before, them saying over and over again, we just hope we come in second place to Star Wars on opening weekend. That's all our aspirations are. They had no idea this thing was going to blow up the way it did. Mm-hmm. And because it did, they were so surprised by it. And I agree with you, Riley. I think they thought they could repeat the same pattern.
Yep.
But I think they're going to get snake bit with this.
They might.
I don't think it's going to make the money that the last one did.
Does any part of you, after seeing this movie, keeping it spoiler free, want to see a third one?
Yes, if they correct a little bit of the mistakes of the second one, yeah, I wouldn't be. I'd be down with it, and I'd be down with it being in the summer.
Do you guys like, I'm assuming since you both seem to like the first one better, do you like that or the 90s Jumanji? Like, what's your favorite?
Oh, I don't like the 90s Jumanji. It's not my jam.
Shit, man, that's my jam.
I like both a lot, but probably the OG. Probably 90s Jumanji. Wow. Probably.
And Robin Williams stuff.
Yeah. I think that if you are looking for a fun time and you want to have some popcorn and laugh a little bit, this is totally a great movie to go to.
Yeah.
I'm seeing mixed reviews on the internet, and some people are bashing this movie.
I
don't really get. Yeah. There was nothing about it to me that was like, they tried to mix it up a lot, and I think Awkwafina is a great addition to the team. She's really fun.
Totally.
Obviously have some of the same cast, and so there's some of the same beats, but they try not to do that over and over again.
Yeah.
Speaking of bashing movies, did you guys see Elijah Wood's tweet?
No.
I saw this, D, but for the people who did not, what exactly did Elijah say?
So Variety, like a lot of other outlets, did a worst movies of the year list. Like, everybody. I mean, the Razzie Awards exist, right? Like, this is something that's been going on for a while where outlets do their best and their worst list of the year. So Elijah ended up retweeting them and just asking, what good does this do?
Yeah.
And a bunch of people retweeted it, including myself, because I was like, it's true. So it's an interesting thing to talk about because we are in that space. We have done those things sometimes. So what do you guys think? Do you think we should stop doing this? Is this something that hurts filmmaking? Like, it's just an interesting thing that I thought happened.
I'm of two minds of it because I'm from that generation where I remember growing up and those are the things you looked forward to. Like, right. What was your favorite critic? What did they hate that right. you might have liked? And why did they hate it? But I've seen the movement over the last 5 years of people pushing back against this, especially a lot of creatives saying, like, this poisons the water. Like, why do you have to come out and say the films that you hated? Because a lot of those films on that list, I think they purposely chose certain clickbaity mm-hmm. movies to put on. Can you tell me Last Christmas is worse than some of the other
yes.
horrific?
Ross is like, I agree.
Well fair. But some of the other horrific films that have come out this year, they're absolutely terrible. No, they try to pick ones that are going to get people's attention and get people talking about it. But overall, yeah, I wonder what good it does because it kind of craps on people's work.
I'm also of a couple minds on this because I think that it is an interesting thing to see. But I've talked to you about this before, John, where you asked me why I don't call myself a critic and why I don't want to join any kind of critics group because I don't like to review movies that I don't like. Mm-hmm. And I think that means that I can't really be a critic because that's not fair. Then I can't just give everything a good review. And for the people who watch the show who say Roxy loves everything, I really only talk about the things I love. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'll talk about the things I don't like if for some reason I think it's funny or ridiculous, like A Last Christmas. But I really, really try to focus on the things I love. Also, as an actress and as an aspiring filmmaker, I hope that one day that gets paid forward to me so I don't make my first film and people rip it to shreds on the internet. Right. So I think that for me personally, I don't click on these lists. I don't read them. You guys know my favorite movie of last year was Life Itself. It was on everybody's list apparently. So I pay no mind to it.
It was on everybody's worst list?
Yeah. From what I hear, again, I don't really read them, but that's what people were telling me. I know it had a 13% on Rotten Tomatoes. Right. So I feel torn because people have a right to know what movies they shouldn't spend their money on. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I don't know what good it does other than that. And it's not like the movies are currently in theaters, or at least not most of them. What do you think, Dave?
I mean, I'm kind of on the same page as you. I grew up as, you know, somebody that loved being a ridiculous movie snob, and I love crapping on things. I grew up as somebody that's like, oh, you like that? Like, whatever, I'm smarter than you because I like this other thing, right? Which is the dumbest way to think, but that's how a lot of us are raised, right? And so, but now that I'm in this space and I met filmmakers and anybody that is creating something, even if it turns out to be not great, there's a lot of people, cast and crew involved, that work really hard on these things, right? And similar to, I hated the Lion King remake, but I still can appreciate the way it looks, and I can appreciate, you know, the artist. Well done, Cody.
And the craft.
The artist behind it and how much time that was spent, right? Like, I think that you can find something good out of everything that's out there, even if it's a bad movie, quote unquote, right? And so I think Elijah Wood's doing that because he produces a bunch of movies. He's not just an actor, right? Like, he actually really, and he's responsible, or he's behind one of my favorite movies of the decade, Mandy.
Yeah.
And all of these movies that I'd rather see a list of movies you might have not seen, than a worst movies list. Like, what is that going to do for me? I'm not going to watch them, right? Mm-hmm. I'd rather just tell me about stuff that I need to see that I haven't seen. Yeah. I think that that's more productive.
Mark, what do you think?
Yeah, Roxy, what you said, I really responded to because it's been something I've been thinking about quite a bit lately as I really kind of dive in more to my own writing and kind of spreading it out even on my Patreon. I'm focusing on that. And you look at these movies, to your point, how hard is it to make a movie, especially in the studio system, and to like go in and crap on it if that's what it is. I'm not necessarily against like the movies that didn't work and critics say, hey, this in a very thoughtful, constructive way.
Yeah.
But when you have like the third part of this list for Variety saying the last half hour of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, that doesn't qualify.
Right.
And that's whether it's a nitpick or just a shot. We're talking about worst movies, and you're telling me
they said that the last half hour
that's
the best
of
part
Once
of the movie.
Thank you. Subjective, sure, right? You didn't like that?
Oh no, I hated the last half of the movie.
Okay, so you.
Interesting, but you still don't believe it qualifies.
No, I don't think it qualifies at all. But clickbaity, that's my point.
And I don't like that, and I agree with Elijah Wood's point because I think that in the culture that we're in on social media, it's very easy to go and pile on to all these movies, and I don't think that really
accomplishes anything. And I'm very conscious of that in my own reviews now because I, like you, Roxy, I don't consider myself a critic. I don't want to be on any critic's list to go see these movies because I'm not seeing them, one, because I listen to you guys now. If you say this movie's not good, I'm going to go try to spend my time somewhere else.
Right.
And I want to give the people, like, hopefully in the future, I'm going to be sitting down with some of these people that might have made movies that didn't work and be a colleague and say, how can we collaborate and put the best product forth?
Yeah. Yeah.
But, I mean, and also, I mean, and Roka and I, like, give each other shit about it. Like, I'll be like, The Greatest Showman sucks, right? Right. I don't really think it's, like, this horrible movie. I just like, you know, giving him crap because we're friends, unlike you guys that are acquaintances, you know? So, so, you know, basically, I feel...
You slid it right by me.
Anyway.
Because I know your friendship is really on shaky ground.
But
right
I also, and I also don't care if people say that's a shitty movie. Like, I think everybody has a right to that opinion.
Yeah,
right? Like,
I
it's just a matter of, like, when people pile on, like, a director on Twitter or, like, somebody that's a creative on Twitter that it's like, kill yourself. You know, like, stop making movies. Right. Like, that's going overboard.
It influences people to do that. And I think you're right, Rox. Like, we're all together. We can shoot the shit and say, oh, we didn't like it. Like, Roxy and I had last Christmas discussion. It was very funny off mic after that morning. And just having a discussion was fun. Right. That's different. You put it out for public consumption like this. Where's the counter, which is where are the movie reviewers telling you your top five worst movie reviews of the year?
Right.
Where's the counter to that?
Yeah.
Can you believe he or she said this about this movie and constructed the sentence of the review this way? That's how you counter. And then you go, well, because critics seem to get away with criticizing but not being criticized themselves.
Right.
It's kind of a free reign, and I don't think that should be existing.
I went out in the job title.
Yeah. Cody, what do you think?
I agree with all this. I think there's nothing wrong with, like, saying a movie sucks. It's just when you're, like, you're being so mean-spirited and, like, so happy to be shitting on movies. That's what encourages shitty behavior from other people.
Yeah, I always try to keep in mind, too, like, you know, a movie that I didn't love, but I'm not going to say it was a horrible movie, but I didn't love it, was Boyhood. And then I think about the fact that it would take me 1 minute to go to the internet and bash Boyhood to say, this movie sucks, whatever it is. And what, it took him 7 years to make the movie?
Yeah.
So, like, that's 7 years of somebody's effing life.
Yeah.
Right.
When you can do that much destruction in a minute of 7 years of somebody's life, I don't know. It's kind of a tough look.
This is also...
And that's exactly what you said, too, though. Like, it takes you a minute to bash on somebody. But at the same time, I'm like, that's a whole minute. That's a lot of energy for me to, like, go and, like, bash someone. Like, why am I going to waste my energy on that? That's what I don't get.
And I've also noticed, especially in social media, and it really started, I noticed, with Last Jedi and with Rian Johnson, because I saw this happening a couple years ago around that time, that there were a lot of creators, writers, directors that were starting to get hit on social media, like Rian Johnson. Rian Johnson was absolutely pummeled by fans. And I've seen that with David Ayer for Suicide Squad. I saw that Chris McQuarrie coming out to the defense of Rian Johnson. I've seen people go after these creators, these directors, these writers, and I find it really troubling. It's really unfortunate because then I start to see them take – they're defensive. They're sticking up for each other. And I don't feel like that's healthy for these people. And I don't feel like it's really nice of people. I know it's stupid to say maybe, but it's like, be nice to everybody.
I don't think it's stupid to say at all.
I believe that.
I agree. And I think that because of that, right now we usually go to a commercial break. But I'd rather talk about something we love before we cut to commercial. Mm-hmm. Because we did not yesterday have the chance to talk about Watchmen.
Yes.
And we are all watching Watchmen. We're all loving Watchmen. And episode 8 aired. And we have passed the 24 hours that I feel like it's respectful enough to talk about in a spoiler way. So let's do a spoiler Watchmen episode 8 conversation. Darina.
Spoilers.
Spoilers. Thank you, Cody.
Spoiler of the century. Is that your blue dong that you're swinging there? Wow. Good for you, Cody and D. Good for you.
Definitely some dong in that.
Watchmen. Guys, talk to me. Darina, I know that you said that this was your favorite episode
Favorite episode of the season. I think that was a beautiful hour of television. I did not know how they were going to handle the big blue guy, who is obviously one of my favorite characters in the whole comic book. But I loved it. I think it was a beautiful way of doing a love story on TV, a very unique way of storytelling. I also was worried about how it was going to look And obviously it looks a little bit similar to the Zack Snyder movie, right? Mm. Which is fine because that one looks great.
You mean so, how Dr. Manhattan was going to look in that form?
Yeah, yeah, just in general, right? I love seeing John talk to Adrian. Like that that scene, I was like, oh, my nerd feels were like, holy crap. Like that was awesome. I was very happy with it.
Mm, same. This was – it's hard to say. Last episode might still be my favorite, but this is now up there. Because I, like you, love Dr. Manhattan. I wanted to know how are they going to pull it off. Mm-hmm. Not only that, just I wanted to see Dr. Manhattan fuck shit up.
Yeah.
And he fucked shit up. Mm. I was so excited. I'm sorry about it. I'm a big nerd about
this.
Don't
be sorry for being
it
excited.
Was getting to that point of like, how are they going to pull off Dr. Manhattan? And I thought it was so brilliantly done. The mystery of where he is, learning who he is, and then seeing his power come out. That was something that I really wanted to see, the nerd in me. But just how they handled it. It was so beautiful. And the performance, just everything. I'm still going crazy. I walked into my house last night and went, I want to watch Watchmen again. I really want to see that episode again because there is so much going on underneath just like the themes and the idea that he's choosing a body and why he chooses this body. And then
so glad they explained that.
Yeah.
There was a lot of talk on the internet about what it meant that a blue man chose a black man. And what I like the fact that Regina King just thought that he was hottest.
Right. Yeah.
Like, no, that he's sexy.
It could be as simple as that. Yeah. It could be something deeper. And that's and that's what this series is doing, is the various layers that we have that they deal with in this like kind of alternate future or alternate reality. But I just adored this episode.
John, you share a first name with the blue guy. What's up?
I do. Here's the deal with
no
this.
H.
Yeah, I wish. I would love to be the Dr. Manhattan. Jesus. Which, what is amazing is...
No, you'd be sad.
He's sad.
I don't know. Maybe. The idea of...
You don't think Dr. Manhattan's
the
sad?
The relationships... Well, I don't know if he conceives of
your whisper
human
voice,
emotion.
Man.
But no, because then you're never – really quick, sorry. But you're never surprised, though, if you're him, right? Like you know everything that's happening.
Right.
That's what's so heartbreaking about the character.
Right. That's a fair point. And that's what she calls him out on, right? When's the last time you were fucking afraid of anything?
Exactly.
50 fucking years or whatever she says. But what I thought was brilliant, too, is whenever we're in a relationship, isn't it always all the timelines happening with us? All the timelines. You're always remembering the first time. You're always remembering the best times, the worst times. So to me, although Riley's right, it was a unique way to see it presented on the screen. It's legitimately how we actually perceive our relationships.
And our memories.
Yeah. I mean, Roxy, we were just talking about the journey. We immediately flashed like four or five different memories. That's how we live in our world.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't
that's
you?
That's great, dude. I think about it that way.
I love what you just said because I think that that's why it did touch home for so many people. Whether it's love, friendship, whatever it is. Yeah, even me and you talking about our relationship, I'm sure as we're talking about it, it's like I can think of five distinct things like about the journey, or if you think about your current significant others, your exes, like all throughout the why you hold things against them. There's some things that just never go away, some things that you remember stronger than others. So I think that is why we did connect to it. But I will say I love this episode. I love this show. And this is an emotion I think that they want me to feel, but I do feel incredibly frustrated watching this sometimes.
Really?
Yeah, because – and I think I'm supposed to. But first of all, I'm screaming at the motherfucking television.
Mm-hmm.
Move. Move. 1 inch to your left. 2 inches to your right. Go up in the air. Duck down. Fucking move, bitch. Like, move.
Get out the way.
Right? Boom, boom, boom. I'm killing everybody. And now you know that is behind you. Move.
Right.
But he can't. But why can't you? The power of free will in general is something that is so important to me. And watching somebody who seemingly does not have that because they know everything that's happened is like pulling my eyelashes out one by one. Right. I just want to scream for them.
Think about it this way. Doctor Strange. In Endgame,
I hate Doctor Strange.
Yeah, I know, but the inevitability.
This is a better version of Doctor Strange.
Yes, the inevitability of this needs to happen. You don't think so?
It's different because what he says is there are 1,000,005 possibilities.
Right.
What Dr. Manhattan says is this is what's happening.
This is the only timeline.
So let me clarify. So he knows that it's inevitable that he has to be taken out by this gun, whatever it is, for her to maybe survive.
It's not that he knows it's inevitable that it has to happen somehow. He knows it's happening this how.
this way.
And so he has to follow that through.
But that's so different than this might happen and there's one chance that it doesn't. He's saying this is what's up, and she keeps fighting that, which is what I would do if I was Regina King. You fight that, right?
That's
like
what I loved.
If somebody tells you this is what's happening, the kind of person I am, I'm like, no fucking way.
But,
and when she goes outside and he says, this is the moment I fell in love with you, she says, you just fell in love with me 10 years later. No, I've always been in love with you. Like the whole thing, I just want to punch somebody in a good way.
And I think this is correct because this is the microcosm of what he represents,
right?
Which is religion. He represents a god.
Totally.
He is a god. You are frustrated by it. Why do children die? God, why do children die?
Right. Yeah.
Why does this happen?
Why is there
why
war?
Why does the Blade Runner? Right, exactly. Why does the lead singer of Roxette get a brain tumor when she's brought so much joy to so many people with her music? That's the world, right? And you're frustrated because you're like, why is this happening the way it's happening? So if God was actually on Earth, he'd be like, this is what's going to happen. This is what's the, this is. And you'd watch it happen. You're like, why? And that's what, I mean, as soon as he created those creatures and created the world, you're just like, he's God. So we're watching him. And he's when he walked on water, it was like the banging on the head type of situation. And so this is why he did it the way he did it. And he was so calm about it. Like Shannon last night was like, why wasn't he more dynamic? Like doing no-look kills. I'm like, that's not what Dr. Manhattan or God
He's
would do.
He's never been that.
That's right. It's not necessary.
Just
it's
John, just
it's
John,
inevitability.
John,
it's inevitability.
The inevitability of it. That's he knows that it's no matter what, it's going to happen. Yeah. But I think there's something that that he knows that we don't yet.
Let me ask you guys this then. If there's things that he knows that we don't, which I'm sure there are a bajillion of them, but the one that I'm curious about is what he ends up doing with Adrian because he sends him somewhere. He says, do you want to go? Obviously knowing what his answer is going to be, and sends him. And then the whole post-credit thing with the horseshoe and the cake. What is happening here? And is Dr. Manhattan setting Adrian up for success or failure?
That's a good question. Or redemption.
That's what I think.
Yeah.
Redemption would be success.
Success.
Right.
On Earth.
I'm just putting it a different way because of the character we know, what happened in the Watchmen comic, how he now ends up on Europa.
Yeah.
But what would that redemption be then? What
I
does that look
know.
Like?
See, that's where it's like...
But then is that part of God's plan or the universe's plan, right? Like, that's the thing. It's like, we don't know. It's the same as like how like Rorschach ends up.
Right.
Does that make... Like, why did he do that, right? Why did Dr. Manhattan do that? Like, we don't know, right? Like, that's the thing. He knows why these things happen and what his duty is in this timeline or whatever, right? Because he represents time.
Let me ask you guys this one. Do you hate him?
No.
Dr. Manhattan?
Yeah.
No.
Do you?
God, no.
Yes, I hate him.
Really?
Yeah, I hate him.
Okay,
I hate
why?
Him.
Why?
Fascinating.
I hate him.
That's
Do people have reasons?
Usually,
but
it's okay.
If you don't know,
that's one conversation.
It's not that I don't know. It's that I hate him for who he is.
Okay.
I hate what he says. I hate how he acts. Mm-hmm. I hate him.
Calculating.
I think it's not
without
that
emotion.
Does he annoy
you?
No,
because he totally has him. I think that he has way more emotion than I figured he would have.
See, I didn't see emotion when he was sitting in the bar. It was more when he became...
Oh, there was emotion in that bar. There was tons of it.
When he tells her he loves
him. Does he annoy you as a character in the book?
No.
Or just what he's representing right now?
He doesn't annoy me.
Okay.
It's the point of the show right now.
But why though? Like the character itself?
Maybe for the reason that I'm not religious.
Okay.
I don't believe in that. I think that it's
That's
wrong.
Fair.
I believe in freedom of choice and will and power and people not being all-knowing, even if he is. I think that that's a crappy quality to have. If somebody knows everything, what do they have to learn? What do they have to gain? What do they have to do with people?
But he's not human, though.
I don't appreciate that he still ends up being with Regina. I think that it's a selfish choice because he loves her and he doesn't have to do to her what he does to her. I hate him. I love his character. He's an excellent character, but no, I hate him.
This has always been Manhattan's thing, though, which is why I push back when people say he's not human. He is human.
He's human.
He's still at the base human, which is why he pursues love.
It's kind of like Spock, right? Where like, where he
degree.
Has a little bit
because
of human in
to.
Him, but then he's doing what he thinks is logical. Or
right,
whatever.
But Spock's never had the Spock's weakness or whatever you want is Achilles' heel has always been his emotion.
Uh-huh.
Dr. Manhattan's is always love.
Right.
Yeah.
And the first woman he was with then cheated on her,
gave her
cancer, but cheated on her with a younger woman and then she's still in love with him and she calls him and leaves the jokes. She's still somewhat in love with him.
Lori
still, and here he is doing this with Regina because he's fallen in love with her. So he's always, no matter how powerful he is, he is always still subject to the human emotion of love and destroys things around him in pursuit of that, a human does sometimes.
And I don't care. I know that people are saying he's not making choices, but I believe it is a choice. I believe going into that bar is a choice. I believe introducing
I think that's
himself.
Absolutely fine.
I agree. I completely agree with that.
A choice for a bigger outcome. That
yeah, maybe
he,
a,
if
a
he,
larger. Like
yeah, if he doesn't make that choice yeah. to go tell her that he loves her, knowing what he knows for the future, it all, I think it's all connected somehow,
it
and
is,
we just don't know how yet.
I'm not
but
even
he
saying,
still has a choice, like Roxy's
saying. I'm not
saying,
even
though,
saying
yeah.
I'm not saying he's the worst person on the planet. I'm not saying anything yeah. other than I hate him. Like, I think he is.
I understand.
Of all of them, I hate him more than I hate Adrian.
Should we get you a shirt that says "I hate Dr. Manhattan"?
But
that is a great shirt, actually.
Cody, how do you feel?
Oh, this is a good conversation you guys are having. Good job, gang.
Hey, thanks, Cody.
I love this episode, and I love that it kind of put to bed the notion that Lindelof doesn't understand Dr. Manhattan.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
what a lot mm-hmm. of people were saying at the end of the last episode. Like, he would never come back. Why would he come back to Earth? He gave up on humanity. And I thought this episode showed that Lindelof understands that character perfectly.
Yeah.
That's a great point, Cody. Yeah. yeah.
I agree. I'm now curious at the end of this series or season, if it's not going to get a season two, I'm still confused
I'm so,
on what's happening there.
The rumors are there is a season two, but Lindelof is not coming back.
Oh.
Wow.
That scares me.
Then I think there should be no season two. But
I think
for me, I'm going back and forth. My favorite Lindelof show is Leftovers.
Yeah.
But I love Lost as well, and I'm wondering, with a couple of years' distance, where Watchmen's going to fall. If it does take that number one spot, if it's two, if it's three, if he does do a second season, if Lindelof comes back, for how that show gets tainted, if he doesn't, a lot of questions about Lindelof in general.
Yeah.
I wonder,
and it's
yeah.
It's also funny that I was one of those like Lost finale haters, and now I'm like, oh, and then Prometheus, I'm like, Prometheus was like half really great and half of it didn't like, and now I'm like, I am a Damon Lindelof fan now. I don't know how that happened, but it happened with Watchmen. So
because
you
your heart is not just cold.
Wait,
warm.
I don't think it's in there, though.
It's beating,
actually,
it's bleeding.
If
turn
you
on
open,
your heart
if
life.
You rip my chest out, you actually find a little box, and then you open it, and it just sent a little note that says, ha ha.
That would be amazing.
Fooled you.
Guys, we will go to commercial when we come back. I will do a little bit of crisis talk, because I know people have been tweeting at me about it, and the second episode air, I want to talk about that. Also, Joey Ryan's going to be joining us. He wrestles with his penis. That's all you need to know, so stick around till the end.
My kind of guy.
Also, Patty Jenkins news. We've got some stuff about Eternals, Birds of Prey, and we will get to all of that very soon.
Here's a dong take.
Oh, the fucking dog at the baby. God damn.
What's up, guys? Your boy Dorian. Make it big.
Oh, yes, Alex. Oh, yes, Alex.
Josh! 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 Josh, Josh. All right, let's try it once more for the stupid people. You know who you are. Maybe you don't know who you are. Sit down. Sit down.
That ass, and I'm gonna beat that ass, and I'm gonna beat that ass.
I want some candy ass,
and I'm gonna beat that ass, and I'm gonna beat that ass, and I'm gonna beat that ass.
I want some candy ass.
Jesus, Jesus, Jesus.
Oh,
Jesus. I didn't think this was a fucking big deal.
I like it, but what is it?
Royalty-free music?
Yeah, but this doesn't sound royalty-free. This sounds epic. Cody Hall?
It's royalty-free.
Wow!
Whoa.
Roxy, you can write a song around it.
We got to find the person who made this, and we got to get them to do a Collider Live theme.
Okay. Go do that.
We'll look
Why
him up.
Don't you do that?
My favorite Dorina is bitchy Dorina.
Okay. Oh, like this morning when you guys are like, "Oh, you don't have Apple." I'm like, "Oh yeah, where's your Spotify rap list, bitches?" Because I have it.
What?
We went on 7 timelines and I fell in love with you.
What the fuck?
My big blue hero.
He's doing a Dr. Manhattan song.
My big blue hero.
Dude, you're like,
I met you in Vietnam.
You're doing something here.
I love your blue dong.
Ooh.
You make
you in
blue
Vietnam. Oh, with that blue dong.
This is good stuff. This is good stuff.
Welcome back to Collider Live.
I think we found our new theme song, guys.
But it was like,
just clip that out, Cody, and that's our song.
At first, it was either stroke or singing, like, because you were doing this, like,
¿Por qué no los dos?
That was. I was imitating those singers from the 90s when they would hug the mics.
Oh, yeah, or like, We Are the World.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You lost.
You okay there? He's joking.
That's so good. Oh, that killed me. All right. Whew. Let's come back and do a little crisis talk, and then we'll get right into this news, guys.
Da-da-da-da-da.
Wow.
What was that?
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Oh, that was bad.
Sorry,
was,
I was singing to Martin.
Elfman.
Do you think it's better when we're all in our own worlds?
Yes.
I don't know. What
Aren't
the audience
we all
think?
Anyways, though?
Yeah.
I don't know. I just looked at your water and remembered that that Mark Ellis puts his gum in his water and
so
felt
gross.
Sick to my stomach.
So does Robert Pattinson.
Yes, yeah, so. And that's why I think Mark Ellis is Batman.
That's
wow,
true.
Roundabout way to get there. Speaking of Batman, Crisis on Infinite Earths. Yo, Kevin Conroy last night.
Hey.
This is a much, much better episode than the first part of Crisis.
Oh, yeah. You didn't like that Supergirl episode?
I did.
Okay.
It was fine.
Yeah.
But episode two, are you watching?
I am.
Okay. So you watched last night?
I did.
I thought it was infinitely better. Infinitely better. Okay. My pun I stumbled on, but you get what I was going for. Mm-hmm. What did you feel?
I did. I liked it. I thought it was good. I didn't dislike the Supergirl stuff. I think I know what I'm getting when I go into a Supergirl episode, so I'm like, I don't have my expectations that high. So it was fine. But this was fun. The Tom Welling, what did you think about the Tom Welling stuff? Did you like that? Did you not like that? Was it not enough?
I actually really liked it. However, a lot of questions.
Okay, fair.
Like how? How did that happen? Right. And then also, I'm curious from diehard Tom Welling Superman fans how they feel about it. Because for me, he's not my Superman.
Right.
But I don't know. Did that feel disrespectful at all to you, what they did with his character?
No, I thought it was a I thought it was an interesting decision.
Yeah.
And I think like
strong
you.
Strong choice.
Yeah, strong choice. And like you, I'm not a massive Smallville fan, but I thought he was great as Superman on Smallville.
He was excellent.
And so to see him get a little bit of a highlight and then make such a strong decision about it, I thought, hell, if you're going to be memorable for coming back and doing a cameo on Crisis on Infinite, why not have something people are talking about the next day about what happened to you?
I feel like Michael Rosenbaum was missed.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
He was missed in this. Hopefully he comes on Collider Live at some point soon. But that was tough for me. I also feel like we still have not nailed a live action Lois the way that I would like to.
Not since Margot Kidder or ever.
You didn't like Amy Adams?
I like Amy Adams for that universe. But I agree. I haven't seen
I love
one
her
since
Man of
Margot.
Yeah, I guess. I guess I agree. It but doesn't hold up
right
in the way that I want it to. Because at the time, when I first watched, I felt like fine. But now I feel like Lois Lane seriously has never been handled appropriately for how a woman in 2019 needs to be.
As soon as I saw Emily Blunt.
I just forgot about Terry Hatcher, too.
Yeah.
I feel the same way about Terry Hatcher, too, though. Yeah. I just feel and it's not the actor's fault at all. I just don't know that this Lois feels to – but it's not her fault. But she had a lot of screen time last night, and that was a little frustrating to me. I think that I feel really lucky I watched Legends of Tomorrow because there was so much Legend stuff. Was that confusing at
all?
No,
because I watched.
Okay. Because that was a lot.
Yeah.
A lot. Constantine stuff was cool?
Yep. Enjoy him.
Any other
No, the Conroy stuff, which you just touched on, I thought that was nice to see him – be a part of it, and
this is the first time he's ever done a live action Batman.
Live action,
right?
Batman, yeah.
That's
this is
cool.
The way you do it.
Yeah,
it was hard to watch. Not in a not in a he didn't do it well way, but just the material they gave him.
Yeah.
I felt like oof, woof.
Like he deserved better. You mean?
No, just I'm like towing the line of spoilers right now. I keep going back
heavy,
and forth. Yeah, it was really, really heavy. Yeah.
Okay, so it was good. You actually really
I really liked it. I liked his stuff. I thought that Ruby Rose actually did a really good job in the scene, too, comparatively to what it could have been.
Mm.
And Melissa Benoist for the win always. Yo, she is so good. She is the perfect Supergirl.
She needs to bust out of that once and for all. Yeah. She's so good.
She's so
she
good.
She should be feature film.
They should make a movie with her.
Yeah, that's not Supergirl.
There's a Supergirl movie in development still. Yeah.
But not with her, or we don't know?
No, not with her.
No.
Okay.
I think she needs to just bust out. There's no reason she shouldn't be leading horror films or leading all these other things. But
she's
always such a good
she's
actress.
She's a star. Yeah. She's really great.
Yeah.
I like this episode better. I'm glad that you're liking it too. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited for tonight's episode, which will round out the December Crisis stuff. It was interesting to me that Black Lightning aired last night as well.
Yeah.
You see, I didn't watch it, but it's weird that it's running parallel with the
It's like
Crisis.
Comic books, right? Sometimes certain lines would keep going even though there was an overall arcing story happening. You just had to collect certain episodes or certain issues of it, you know. And all the titles just kept going, so.
Yeah, totally.
They have their stories to tell.
Let's stick on the DC train and talk a little Patty Jenkins right now. What's going on, Mark?
So Patty Jenkins, you know, as we know, we got Wonder Woman 1984. They were at the Brazil Comic Con, and she did, in an interview, say that they've already figured out the story for Wonder Woman 3. It kind of came to them in the development of Wonder Woman 1984. However, we might not get it for quite some time. She's kind of alluding to that they're going to take their time on Wonder Woman 3, and it could be anywhere between more than 2 years, but she didn't really kind of land on a time between the movies. So
longer time spent on a movie is good. Yeah, Cody.
I think so.
But she is for sure going to direct the third one.
I mean, she's hinting at it. Yeah,
okay.
She's saying that they have an idea that she doesn't want to do back-to-back filming. Like she felt like she went right into, as you know, she did Wonder Woman, and then there was a little bit of time for her to negotiate to come back for this because I think she was only contracted for one movie. So now I think she might have been signed on for two, but she's really saying I'm not doing back to back like I did with this. So, but it's very simple. She has Wonder Woman 3 story. She's not really going into details, and that the only detail we really do is going to take its time to get there. So she's not saying not 2 years, which was back to back for her. But that it's going to be longer. So we might see a 3-4 year period between Wonder Woman movies.
Which is what we'll be seeing between Aquaman movies.
Right.
A 4 year period. I remember when she was doing press for, like, you like the My Man?
I just can't I can't.
I remember when she was doing, when Patty Jenkins was doing press for Wonder Woman, the first movie, she talked about having the story for the second movie.
Yeah, right. This is smart what she's doing.
Yeah, she does this. She does this. And also, I think probably most people who work on franchise films start thinking about what the next movie could look like.
Mm-hmm. Especially if it's a trilogy and you need to wrap it up, for sure.
Yeah, but I don't know that it would be a trilogy. I wonder if Wonder Woman does 4 movies, right. 5 movies,
yeah.
3 movies. I don't know.
Hey, how many Batman movies do we have? Why not?
We have a lot of Batman movies.
I just don't know
that DC is even having those conversations right now because I think that they're just thinking about making successful films, and I think they're going to see if Wonder Woman 2 is great and Patty Jenkins knocks a second one out of the park. Obviously, they're going to invite her back to do the third one. Mm-hmm. And if that's great, then they're going to ask her to do a fourth one.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think this is why this is brilliant marketing by her. You said she did it after the second one so that fans are like, oh, what's the third? What's episode two? What's the third one? And then Warner Brothers is in a position where she can negotiate with a little bit of leverage here. It's smart. All around, it's smart because I don't think most – because it was never announced as a trilogy.
No.
She just has ideas. And so she did it after the first one. She's doing it after the second one. This is following the pattern. So she gets set up. I think it's very smart businessman, mm-hmm. businesswoman thing to do for her.
I love your thinking on that, Roka, too, because the same – yeah, I could agree more because you get people that want to know the next movie. They go in droves to see this one.
Yeah.
So that maybe it's like – I don't know if it ends on like a cliffhanger like in the middle movies like they'll do with mm-hmm. you know, Empire, then it's like, oh, it's the Empire Strikes Back of whatever movie.
Right.
So I don't know if she has that plan. But if you get people coming in droves to see this thing, it makes over $1 billion. Warner Brothers is on the other end going, she has an idea for the third one. Oh, fuck. Great. We're going to have to go back to the negotiating table and good on Patty Jenkins for that.
Yeah, because she wasn't signed for the second one after the first one came out.
No.
They had to negotiate that, and she took a while negotiating that.
Which she should, because she probably was not making that much money on the first one and is probably making a boat ton of money on the second one. Also,
especially after what happened with Joker.
Yes.
Right.
Also, I think that what we've seen in the press, at least, and what I hear behind the scenes, Patty Jenkins and Gal Gadot are very close.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So I'm sure that she talked to her. And Patty was like, yo, Gal, timeline-wise, you're a hot ticket right now. What do you want to do? What do we want to work on? And I'm sure that they kind of came to a scheduling agreement of like, I need a second of a break, different projects, whatever, for both of them. And so I think that this is smart. I don't mind waiting 4 years for a great movie.
I completely agree, always. And I also, again, I don't care if things are connected. I just want to see a good movie. Hmm. But Dan V900 would like me and Mark to know that us not watching Crisis makes us out to be hypocrites and liars.
So, oh, what?
No. So just thought you should know. Yeah.
Well, I don't think it
makes about what?
Very amazing.
It doesn't make you hypocrites and liars. It makes you a hypocrite and you a liar. Right. I think they were trying to say, like, you're the hypocrite and he's a liar.
Yeah, which makes sense. That's our brand.
No, yeah, I see it now. Yeah,
you don't want to pile it on. You're not both a hypocrite and liar, so don't feel that bad about yourself.
just the one thing.
Right.
So you guys are acquaintances, liar, hypocrite.
I'm really sorry about loving Superman as much as I do and not watching Crisis. Yes. I will get to it.
How dare you? You are no longer a true Superman fan,
Mark. There it is. I lied. I lied by saying I love Superman, yet not watching Crisis.
Haven't made it easy for you guys to watch it.
Yeah.
Like, it's been 8 years of more than a half dozen shows.
I did watch some of it. I definitely was looking forward to it. Here's the thing about a hypocrite and a partial liar. But no, this is the thing. I watched the Kevin Conroy scene. Yeah. I watched the Tim Burton stuff. Like, I think that that's great that these shows exist. They are just not for me. They are. It makes me feel like I'm watching a '90s TV show, which is fine.
How do I know if you're lying?
Well, you don't.
Mm.
You never know. That's right,
guys. What if the lie is that she actually is watching?
Yeah.
Exactly.
What a twist. Let's stay in this DC camp, guys, because we got more DC news, and this is a big one. I have a feeling the internet has feels on this. Birds of Prey, Riley. What's up?
Yeah, so this one got me. This is an interesting thing. When we're talking about the Wonder Woman stuff and we're talking about Aquaman, all these things, and what are – like, do we need all of it connected somehow in the DCEU? Like, that's where they were going, right? Everything was connected. Now it seems with Joker and everything, they're just trying to make good movies. Mm-hmm. That's what you said, that, Doreen, right? So – our own Haley Fouch was doing the set visit for Birds of Prey, and they – thank you. I was waiting for that. And so when they asked director Kathy Yan what specific amount of time passed since we saw Harley Quinn in Suicide Squad last, she said something very interesting. She said there's not any known amount of time. No, kind of exists in a parallel timeline. And that's all she said. They didn't really go into it more than that. But when she says parallel timeline, that this Harley could be what? Disconnected from Suicide Squad, events of Suicide Squad,
yeah.
Okay.
Which is then disconnected because Batman is in that, mm-hmm. disconnected from Man of Steel, Batman v Superman, Justice League, and what have you. What does this mean?
So this if I'm understanding correctly, this is to keep the story specifically for Birds of Prey, the movie, separate from every other movie.
Possibly, but let's talk about what DC means when they talk about timelines or multiverse, uh-huh. or Earths, because it is very confusing. And as somebody who is a DC comic book reader,
right.
movie watcher, TV watcher, I'm still slightly I know you guys love when I say I'm confused. I'm still slightly confused.
Are you confused?
Same. I'm just like, sometimes it's just really confusing for my little head.
It's just so confusing.
And I don't know how it gets under my blonde hair, but it just gets stuck in there. So it gets hard to get out the information.
That's what she
sometimes.
Said.
but here's what I gather. Yeah. Here's what I gather from the specific phrase parallel timeline. This is not parallel Earth. This is not a different Earth. Parallel timeline would be more like a flashpoint type situation, mm-hmm. where we are living in a different timeline, same Earth. But I don't know if that's what you gather from that phrase, John.
Well, she's an unreliable narrator. So the parallel timeline makes sense because who knows how much of any of this is going to be the truth that we're watching. So she has a right to create her own timeline.
So you think it's not an actual phrase like parallel timeline? Everybody's living on this Earth on a parallel timeline. You think it's more of a Harley's parallel?
Yes, because
did you think like that with Joker? Did you think he was an unreliable narrator watching it, or no? Because some people think that.
Well, because I don't think he's telling a story. Okay. There are shots. Okay. There are sequences where he's not involved.
Okay.
So I don't think it's the same thing.
But
Todd said it was a not connected. So to me, I just dismissed it as that.
Okay.
But with this feels – because if you – Haley also talked about the first 5 minutes of the film, which they showed down in Brazil. And she is narrating from the beginning what she has done and what mm-hmm. she's doing, what's changed, breaking up with a Joker, ramming her car into Axis Chemicals and blowing up the whole chemical plant to kind of be a separation from the Joker. We don't know how much of that is really true and not true, and Harley Quinn is insane. So how much of what we're watching is the actual truth of what's happening?
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. If she's our guide through all of it and her name is in the title, then I don't know how much of it we can take as canon, right. as gospel. And
she obviously must have titled her own story too, because mm-hmm. the only
right.
reason that they had one fabulous emancipation of one Harley right. Quinn is mm-hmm. like, this is her story,
yeah.
and I'm writing it.
And I love that.
And I got it that it was connected to Suicide Squad with that title because of her relationship with Joker in that movie, and that this is her like mm-hmm. breaking free of that and having this. But to your point, John, here's the quote. Harley is the narrator of the story, a very unreliable, erratic narrator, yeah. which is fun, Robbie said, but also gives, I think, the audience an opportunity to kind of be inside her brain sometimes and see the world through her eyes. So I love the idea that it's parallel, that it might be a not faux timeline, but she's making it up. This is her world. Is she crazy? Is she having problems? Is this
like, is the movie going to be like a kind of us viewing her brain?
Yeah. It is interesting because maybe these are the words that Kathy Yan said, and I'm putting too much weight in them, but she didn't say alternate timeline.
Right.
She
right.
did say parallel. Mm-hmm. So maybe what she's actually alluding to is that while other things are going on in DC, this is simultaneously going on
yeah,
with Harley.
Sure.
And it could be as simple as that.
Yeah.
Sure.
This doesn't bother me. I saw some people on the internet saying this is their way to tell whatever story they want and then kind of retcon everything else and have it going back to normal. If that is the case, I'm still fine with it because make a good movie, tell me whatever story you want to tell. That's the benefit of being with the DC, that you can do that,
mm-hmm.
that we can have all these different pockets and timelines and Earths and characters that are the same in the TV and the movies mm-hmm. and different actors playing them. that's why it all does work. But I don't actually think that's what they're saying. I don't think that this is – we're receiving a different Harley than Suicide Squad's Harley. And this is like Earth 5 Harley as opposed to Earth 38 Harley. And this is her parallel story.
Well, and here's a newsflash. This happens in the comics all the time. Brian Nazarello's Joker, which is one of the best.
So good.
Oh,
so
right? Yeah.
Beautiful
None
art.
Of that leads into overall canon of anything. It was just this guy having one night with the Joker and what his experience was like through his eyes. So it's one story. It happens all the time in comics. Why wouldn't it happen in the movies? I know people say, oh, cop out. No, just let's have a good movie. And what needs to connect will connect. And what doesn't, what doesn't. And who cares? We enjoyed ourselves in the theater.
Roxy, with your point, it's like when I read this, I was like, it's going to be interesting for the fans that, like, do we need it all to be connected, or can we just go to what you're literally saying, which is comic book movies. Mm-hmm. They can exist just one shot.
Yeah.
And so it's a movie, and if it does well, we can then get a sequel or continue that story. But connecting to the bigger picture that all these movies have to be connected, we see the Joker is not the case, and it did very well. So it's up to the audience. Do you care? I don't think it really matters.
Yeah.
Just if you want to see a good movie, go see your movie.
Yep. And you should care because it happens in the comics all the time.
That's
why you have different authors and different timelines. Mm-hmm. And
talking comics, let's cross the pond for a second because there's also some Marvel news this week. Mark, what's going on with the Eternals?
Well, so the Eternals, in an interview that Kevin Feige did speaking to Omelette, he did say that the Eternals will take place over 7,000 years as the characters go through different time periods.
Wow.
That's how long they're going to be making Marvel movies for.
That's probably how long. But which makes sense for a movie called Eternals.
Yeah.
And get it? They've been around for eternity? Okay. And that they're also going to
introduce.
You're
going to give them that one, really?
Yeah. Tony's got mine. He's got my back.
It started strong, but then.
But it's also going to connect and introduce the Deviants, which is the other version of the Eternals. Or does anybody know much about the Deviants?
Yo, I don't know jack shit about the Deviants or what's happening here, but I'm along for the ride because Marvel's proven to me, but this is not my world. I do not know.
I'm very confused about as well, but. It does say here there's a big, long – if you go to Collider.com, there's a great article that breaks down this. But this is the Eternals have in general protected the human race from the Deviants with whom they've always had a war between the two. So we're going to get that introduction, but making sense that it's 7,000 years so you can cross into other areas of the MCU maybe. But I think that's more like – way back in history, way back before Captain Marvel, which is the only prequel we have in the MCU. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see how they connect it.
John, while you drink your water.
Here's my issue.
What's
oh,
that?
Shit.
Oh, shit.
I've always hated the Deviants. Like,
why?
The name.
Oh, okay.
The Eternals is awesome. That's a badass name.
You hate them as in, like, they're horrible people? Or no. You hate them as in, like, you don't care about their story?
I thought it was a terrible name.
Okay.
And that is always, because the Deviants, it seems so small. Compared to the Eternals, right? There should be
something.
Well,
that's what they're going for here.
Right, but
genetically unstable and monstrously grotesque.
Yes, but they go toe-to-toe with the Eternals.
All right, but isn't Thanos a deviant?
Huh?
Thanos is technically a deviant in the comics, no?
He's a mad titan. This is a version of
Thanos.
He's like connected in that way.
Can you do me a favor and rename them?
Decepticons.
Yeah.
Don't poke holes in something you can't plug.
Good point.
She should have gone to Tinker.
Voicing that I've always disliked.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. Darina, how do you feel about all this?
I don't really care. I'm going to go see them anyways. I'll watch them. The cast looks cool. I think it could be like Guardians, where there's a lot of people out there that are not comic book readers that might like it if they do a good job with presenting all the characters. Or I don't think it's going to flop with the cast that they have, right?
Yeah. Sounds like none of us really care. A story you guys definitely do care about, though, that I want to touch upon before we open up those phone lines.
Please.
We're talking horror, baby.
Hey!
Let's hear some Conjuring news.
Okay, so we did get the Conjuring 3 title, and we surprised the hell out of this horror-loving guy when we went into an actual – it's called The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It. And it's actually
– my biopic.
Yeah, it's going to be your biopic. And it's based on an actual court case,
where somebody murdered somebody and said the devil made me do it. So it's actually going to have supernatural elements, but how it actually can lead into some of these cases that, you know, me as the true crime lover that we've heard, you know, Son of Sam, the dog made me do it. You know, these are things that are really interesting that are out there about the human psyche and how can it be supernatural? Is it all in your head? You can walk that line, and whether or not you believe somebody like the Warrens are going to come in and investigate this case, and it's an actual case. So this is probably the best thing that can happen for the Conjuring universe for this guy, for this horror movie guy, because it actually goes into and walks that line of real, in your head, mental illness, supernatural, what have you. And I think it's a great way to do a third movie where the second one, you know, you start introducing the Crooked Man and then you get this other one. It's like, how many ghosts are there? This just seems a little bit more grounded in reality, which I like, which is more scary for me.
I completely agree. Do we know who's involved yet?
Well, James Wan is producing. Let me look. Talk
not,
about
not
yourself
directing,
while I look.
Just producing?
He's not directing this time. I'm trying to find. I can't
remember.
I think
the guy who did Curse of La Llorona.
Oh, that director did? Okay.
I think.
Hold on. Let me find out.
Dorina, you said you're excited?
Yeah. No, I actually, The Conjuring is one of the recent horror trilogy, or I guess, you know, it's going to be a trilogy.
Franchises.
Yeah, that I really like. I grew up being scared of The Exorcist and anything to do with demonic possession, that type of stuff. I don't believe in it, but it's kind of cool, you know, to think that it might happen.
It's weird that you're afraid because
that's
family.
Yeah.
That's your life.
Well, no, I just think that there's always been a demon inside me. And so,
your
you know.
Soul.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. But no, I think that the first. Are you okay there, Roka?
Are you telling me you don't believe in demonic possession? You're Latina and you don't believe
it? Somebody called me a liar in the chat, so how do you know?
You are a liar and a hypocrite.
Right huh, John?
Wait, can you explain to me what that just means? What do you mean?
It's so deep in our culture.
Oh, yeah. Completely. The demonic possession thing.
What does that mean?
That's why The Exorcist was like banned from like theaters and shit
like
that.
What does that mean? You guys believe that the devil can possess you? Like,
yes.
If somebody says they murdered somebody because of the devil, you could believe that?
I don't know about that, but I think the idea of being possessed by the devil and the demonic possession, what that looks like, and actually, like you said, Exorcist.
You believe in that?
Yes.
Well, it's whether you believe it, but you say it's entrenched in your culture.
Yeah.
But
right?
You personally believe that it could happen.
Yes.
So, because you are religious.
Yes.
Okay. See, because I'm not religious anymore.
So, do you believe it could happen?
No. No, I mean, well, now I'm more of like a hippie where I could believe anything can happen, right? But I haven't seen it. So, until I've seen it, then I don't believe in it, if that makes sense. But I did believe in it as a kid. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the Conjuring movies did a really good job of like actually making people like me that are now atheists scared. Like, I think and it could be just because of the cast as well. It's shot really well. But this is a good take on it, like Riley said, because people are really into murder documentaries right now, which I think is more horrifying than horror movies because that shit actually happens. So I think it's a really smart angle.
Snyder's whole desk is murder.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Documentary book documentary. He just loves those serial killer books. He's
Well, because people, I mean, look at why The Joker was so successful, right? People like
Mindhunter.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But to Cody, you were right. Michael Chavez, who did The Curse of how do you say it? Yada Llorona?
La Llorona.
I can't.
Chavez.
He is directing.
It's only a Y sound if there's two L's together, right?
La Llorona. You know what's getting me? The Yor with the LL.
Llorona.
Llorona.
Rolling the R's.
You sound so white.
Roxy, I'm the first to call myself out. Yeah. I'm the whitest guy in the room.
Yeah.
All right? Like, and he'll embrace it, and I will say Yadalona da Blana, and I will say Mark Maroney, and I will say whatever the fuck I want.
Say the first thing again. Say the title of the movie again.
La Llorona.
That was the best you did so far.
That's pretty good.
She's had to think about it.
Cody, you do it.
Nope.
Come on.
I know the trap you guys are laying here.
Yeah, I know.
Come on, you did it on the Wingers.
Sit in the room, you play the games.
That's right.
In the room, you play the games.
I'm not in the room, so I don't have to play.
He sang, so I'll give it to him. All right, I'm glad that you guys are fans of this. Let's open up the phone lines and let's take some calls and see how they're feeling about La Llorona and also how they're feeling about Patty Jenkins, or as Dorina Sexley will say, also Patty Jenkins. There's no sexy word for that. Eternals, Birds of Prey, if you agree with Elijah Wood, if you want Hateless.
That Doreen and I are liars and hypocrites.
Also tell us what questions you have for Joey Ryan and his penis. Caller, you're on Collider Live. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hello.
Hello, you're on Collider Live. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, guys. Sean from Boston. How are you?
Hey, Sean.
Hell yeah. Beantown strong. What's going on? What do you got for us?
Sorry about this weekend. Haha, JK. I'm not sorry.
Oh, my God.
Suck my dick, Dorina.
Wow.
I will.
Hey, so back to the crisis stuff. So kind of spoilery about Black Lightning last night. Can I speak freely?
I haven't seen it yet, but yeah, sure. Why not?
All right. Anyway, I just want to say that I was surprised, too, that, you know, the episode was going to air. But they had a cool crisis tie-in at the end, so it all made sense.
Oh, cool. I'm excited for that, then. I'm excited to watch that. I'll definitely I'll check it out by tomorrow. So tomorrow I'll have seen the third part of Crisis and Black Lightning, and then I'll give a little review then. Mm. Sean, anything else for us today?
Right on. No, that's it. Digging the show. Good stuff, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sean.
Calling.
Thanks, Sean.
Boston strong forever, baby.
He's the nicest Boston guy I've ever heard in my entire freaking life.
Mm. He's definitely either a transplant or lives outside.
He's like way out.
Yeah, way out.
Did you see what happened with what's-her-face? Mahomes' girlfriend?
Mm-mm.
Like, they had to move her out of the into a safe spot in the stadium. She was tweeting all through the game how the Patriots fans were coming after her, calling all kinds of names.
I'm not surprised. Okay. I'm not saying that we should. I'm saying I'm not surprised. I mean, I've watched it happen. I told you guys when I was at the Garden and we were playing the Lakers, and I watched two grown men spit on these two young women who were walking by were in Lakers jerseys. Like, Boston fans are the best and the worst of them.
God, I wish I'd been there.
And it's brutal.
I agree.
Caller on Collider out. Live. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, this is G from Glendale once again.
Hey, G.
I'm calling in.
G, so happy you're calling in. I actually almost wore one of the shirts that you gave me today, but I'll be wearing it in the next couple of weeks for sure. And I told Snyder to bring in the bag for Dorina today, but I haven't seen
it. I heard I've got a bag from you, G. Thank you. That's awesome. I can't wait to
welcome.
See it.
Sad, I missed you at the spectacular. But I think you'll enjoy it. There's a lot of red for, you know, your evilness and
blood.
Definitely a demon-like shirt in there.
Sweet.
Gee, what do you have for us today?
I just wanted to say it was super dope meeting y'all last Saturday, and I just wanted to ask if Dorina did receive the package, but I know she's going to be having it now, so. Glad you guys enjoyed loving this new 2.0. Sorry,
G, thanks for calling.
Thanks, G.
Oh, at the gym. See, it sounds like he's at a racetrack.
It's kind of like the gym.
You know, hear the cars?
Yeah.
Betting on the ponies?
Thanks, G. Appreciate the call. Then the shirts. G was great. He came with these backpacks for me and D.
Nice.
That are filled to the brim of cool swag.
Nice.
Yeah, it was really cool. Really cool.
Swag. I like presents.
A lot of people were looking for you at Spectacular, but you didn't show up because
sorry,
you were sick,
dead.
And this is what happens when people don't feel like they can show up when they're sick.
I showed up when I was sick.
Yeah, but you had to. I didn't.
Are we allowed to say
that? So why would I?
No. I was sick.
Yeah, but
you were sick. You're
I'm saying I showed up today.
Oh, yeah. That's what we meant.
Yeah.
Cody. Yeah. Cody, quick. Force a caller in. Quick, Cody. Quick. Not right now, Derek. All right. What is that noise? Caller, you're on Collider Live. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, it's Kevin from New York.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Kevin, happy to have you here. What do you got for us today?
So first, just to keep going on the crisis talk, I just want to say I'm digging all the love being shown to Kingdom Come between Crisis and the Wonder Woman trailer.
Yep.
It has been awesome. I just want to give that shout. But then this is my actual question, and I always kind of like doing this with my friends, so, and because you guys kind of talked about it like a week or two ago. Like, if you had a chance to give a quick 5-minute pitch for like your dream Star Wars movie with a director, just who would you choose? Because I know what I would do.
Mm. What would you do?
A Republic Commando film, because I think that's like a very underrated game, and just kind of what was done in that was really cool within the Star Wars universe. It's very dark, gritty military type, like proper dark, even darker than like Rogue One, and directed by Catherine Bigelow.
Aha. A little Zero Dark 30 in there. I like it.
Thank you for the call and the pitch. Anybody got one?
Yep.
All right, what do you got?
Denis Villeneuve directs.
Yes.
It is centering on the birth of the Jedi, the first Jedi, if you will. But it really goes into the religion and the idea of the Force, and that could it be that when the Force is discovered and that they become Jedi, that there are the people out there like a Han Solo that don't believe in that mumbo jumbo, you know, that they only believe in a good blaster at your side. I think Denis Villeneuve can go into the heady kind of
debate between what is the Force and if it is real and whether or not there is a belief system that you need to adopt to use the Force. Mm-hmm. And it is about religion versus atheism, and it can be something about that, and whether or not you believe, like, trust your instincts. Mm-hmm. A bigger power is out there, and that there is a universe full of people that don't believe that that power exists, and that one person steps forward and becomes the Jedi, and then that births the Jedi Order.
Oh, yeah, so no midichlorians is what you're saying.
No midichlorians. No.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah.
Roku, you got anything?
All right. Phoebe Waller-Bridge. Not a movie, TV show. Either she does the Leia prequel or the Asajj Ventress story with Phoebe Waller-Bridge. Ooh. Now that she's done what she's done.
Asajj Ventress.
Like that. You know, yeah. Being part of Solo, being part of Bond now.
Did you say a Leia prequel?
Yeah.
Where we see her like. Dreamcasting?
Ooh. You're always putting me on the spot, Ron.
That's my job. Rena Riley wrote the Roxy.
I don't know if anybody. I mean, Thomasin McKenzie is my thought, but I don't think she fits physically or facially. But
what about
off her JoJo Rabbit?
John C. David.
Everyone says John Cena. Yeah, definitely.
Of course, always. John Cena would be the best Asajj Ventress.
I finally saw a train wreck for the first time over the weekend.
Excellent, right?
It's my girlfriend's favorite
funny.
Film,
it's
apparently.
It's so isn't great. It so
Cena
good?
Cena is a genius in that.
Yeah,
so
he's funny. Great. He's great.
Him trying to talk dirty is one of the funniest things ever in my life.
Agreed.
Rena.
Roxy. I've always wanted to see when I was a kid. I read the Timothy Zahn books, so yeah. I think it'd be cool to see just one movie of Luke actually turning to the dark side, and directed by Alfonso Cuarón.
Yes.
He's my
favorite.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's you will good. Turn to the dark side now.
I like that.
Did you read Dark Empire though?
What?
I mean, Timothy Zahn books. I forget. Did Luke
Shadow
go to the dark
Empire?
Side?
Splinter
Shadow of the Empire is the comic series.
Right.
It's
yeah.
Splinter
so then,
in the Mind's Eye, isn't that the other one?
That's the one that took place after.
Yeah, him and Leia.
New Hope, yeah.
Yeah.
Caller, you are on Collider Live. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Yeah, this is Jacoby from Dallas, Texas.
Jacoby, thanks for calling in. What do you got for us today?
Yeah, first thing I wanted to say, Riley, I really love your idea.
Thanks, man.
I absolutely love Denis Villeneuve.
Yeah, isn't great?
And as for question, since we're talking about DC stuff, I think yesterday as well, and today. I've always kind of hated the Man of Steel, and I'm sorry, I know that's a controversial topic, but I hated
you.
Man of Steel.
I love you.
Primarily because of the fact that, Superman is supposed to be this idea of he's supposed to be the pinnacle of American ideals.
But he wasn't Superman yet.
Well, he wasn't Superman yet.
You guys, all of you, SMD, let our guests talk.
Okay.
We're so happy to have you here,
Jacoby.
Yeah. You rock.
Sorry, man.
No, it's all right.
Sorry. We're just
triggered. Triggered.
I am not triggered, and I love you.
With my buddies all the time. It's so
no, I am on your team. Never forget that. Keep going.
What's your Twitter handle?
To me, there's a reason why Red Sun works. And Red Sun works because it is imagining Superman if he was not like this pinnacle of the American ideal. But throughout the entirety of Man of Steel, I feel as though Snyder was more trying to make a Superman which is about Ayn Rand's objectivism and kind of working for himself
and
thinking about his own ideals instead of those of the rest of the nation and kind of the culture he belongs in. And so my question was, what historical, what cultural character, comic book, or otherwise, do you think, as they've been updated to the modern age, they've kind of lost touch with their origin, what they're really about?
Thank you so much for calling in. Great call.
That's what I was talking about
with Lois Lane earlier. I think she worked as an earlier character, and I don't think that she works anymore. I don't think she has been updated. The way that she's been updated makes her seem like at the time she was a strong woman. The way that she's depicted now, she's not depicted as strong.
I get
wow.
it.
I get
it.
I didn't mean a mic drop. Hello.
No. You were. I think,
no, we agree.
I think that. Well, I think everybody's thinking of their own.
We're all triggered about the Man of Steel.
Yeah, I don't understand what you're saying.
You don't understand?
What, you don't think Lois Lane is...
she's super independent, does her own thing, doesn't need Superman for shit.
Did you see any of BVS?
Yeah. Oh, BVS.
I thought Man of Steel was different than BVS.
Man of Steel, she does.
Yeah,
her own
Man
thing.
Of Steel,
she
climbs
the damn
a badass.
Iceberg.
Man of Steel a little more, but BVS, yeah. pump, pump.
Yeah.
Wait a minute, but she goes and takes the bullet and investigates.
Except if you see the Ultimate Edition is different, right?
I haven't seen it, obviously.
But like Lewis and Clark are both in the movie more, and they're not in the theatrical release, right? But I get what you're saying. She is different than in Man of Steel for sure. I think my favorite Amy Adam Lewis Lane is Man of Steel.
We don't get to see her investigative skills the way that I want to. She often needs his help. It was kind of cool in Crisis, actually, when he's never mind, that was not that, and I won't say what I'm talking about right now because I realize it's a spoiler for a show that nobody's seen yet. There was a cool thing with Lois Lane at some point in life. Darina, you go.
Well, first of all, I love what the caller said. I actually do agree with the way Zack Snyder was probably trying to portray Superman, but I still think that it was Clark or Kal-El trying to figure out who he is and trying to figure out and becoming Superman. So those two things can actually be intertwined. Like, I agree with him, but I did like that part of the movie, right? So, but on that note, I think Batman, it's weird.
You don't think he's been updated with the times?
No, I just think that it's interesting to see how much he's changed, because I think that in the 80s with Frank Miller's comic books, like, we got because of him, we got the Tim Burton movies. We got the Nolan universe as well. And I feel like, are we kind of now, I think it's time for the character to be updated, right? Because we have seen the same Batman since, for what, like over a decade now?
Mm-hmm.
So I think, do you guys not agree?
I think that character still works with the times. Like, he's this affluent dude who, his backstory, I mean, I think everything still works.
But what do you think of this? Because there was a big hullabaloo when Batman killed in BVS.
Though he's killed before,
Even though he's killed before in some comic iterations, some people thought that that was against his character and had a big problem with that movie. And so would the caller's question go to your point with Batman? Do we need to get away from that, or is he more? Is it more consistent with his character to kill in today's society?
Because that's his vengeance and his justice. But it depends, because Batfleck is very different than like the Kevin Conroy animated series Batman, right? Like, so that's the point I'm trying to make. It's like you have those two, which it's more of a preference then. But I think they both make sense for our current society. Listen,
and Batman is created within whatever construct you put him in, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to kill in the animated series,
right?
But he'll kill in the Snyder version. He's killed in the Tim Burton version. Certainly, Batman Returns. There are a number of deaths.
Dark Knight Returns.
Where it turns, right. That you see a number of deaths. So it's just a matter of, well, where do you put him in? And the truth is this, and people crow about this all the time, and I'm a combo, so you can come at me if you like, but Batman doesn't kill his villains because it doesn't make sense for the story. It's not about it, some kind of moral code or ethics code. It's because you'd lose that damn storyline. So you don't kill the villains, but he will kill people around him, the lesser, the henchmen, sure. But there's not some kind of mantra that Batman will never kill.
Like Superman.
Like Superman.
What movie are you talking about?
Batman v Superman.
No, what was the one you said was...
Dark Knight Rises?
No, Returns? Dark Knight Returns, the comic book. I accidentally said Dark Knight Rises.
I get it.
Not the Nolan, because he made a point to say
we don't have much time before we go to commercial, but I want to know if you guys have answers to the question.
I mean, I'm along his line of thinking that I think Hollywood right now doesn't understand Superman. There's a way to do it. He's jumping off of Man of Steel as his point, but I love to the three of us here that like Man of Steel, we got that story. Now I think the Superman that I want to see that audiences haven't seen, that are wishing to see, the filmmakers, Hollywood, I don't think they understand him. And
just
I think
have Grant Morrison help you write the script.
The greatest example of it is Green Lantern. They completely messed up that whole Green Lantern origin. That's a good pick. That's not Hal Jordan at all. That's Wally West as Green Lantern. That is not Hal Jordan as Green Lantern. Wally West is a wisecracking young Wally West? Yeah, the Flash, the blonde, wisecracking young Flash. That's who Ryan Reynolds was playing as Hal Jordan in Green Lantern. So that's where they betrayed it. That's, to me, the number one example. And Ben Affleck is Daredevil.
We'll be going to our guest, Joey Ryan, very soon. But before we do that, earlier on, Riley, you mentioned your Patreon. And I just wanted to say, I don't think that people know where they can find us outside of this place. So I did want to give a brief plug. Riley, where can people keep up with your Patreon and become fans of yours?
Thank you, Roxy. Yeah. Patreon.com/RileyRoundtable. That's where you can find my stuff.
Doreen, I noticed that you are almost at 10,000 followers on Twitter, and I want to get us there so badly. So that's our new goal
for
end of 2019. Go follow Darina at Evil Darina
on Twitter. And Instagram, not on Facebook. Don't have a Patreon.
And John, I know that you have one as well.
I have 30. What do you mean?
Yeah.
Oh,
you have 30 Patreons?
About, all I can talk about is the top 10. I'll talk about top 10 because it's on Collider. And it's on the Collider Live feed, which is this feed. We've been on, we came back a few weeks ago. Come watch us there on camera, Matt and I, and all our shenanigans doing the top 10. And, of course, we're on the Collider Live podcast feed as well. Mm. You get the audio a week before you get the video unless you're a patron. If you're a patron, which is www.patreon.com/the top 10, number 10 there, go sign up there and you get access to the video ahead of time.
And, Cody, what about for you? This is just a question people keep asking me. Where can we find you outside?
Yeah. So Wangers. I want to make
sure. Yeah, the Wangers have a Patreon.
Oh, good.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I just did it to myself.
Yes, Cody. Oh,
man. Woo! That's being humble. No, but we have a new short film dropping at the end of this week, I believe. So patreon.com/Wangers. Check it out.
We a bunch of busy people. You guys can find me at youtube.com/RoxyStryer. Also, you can find me after this break talking to my friend Joey Ryan all about his dong style.
Yeah.
Yes, you heard that right.
This is John Roca. Hey, everyone, this is John Roca.
Leroy Dragon. Jesus.
Welcome back to Collider Live, guys, with another royalty-free, Cody.
There's a lot of good music out there.
Where are you finding this shit, man?
Internet's a great place.
My friend in the house right now, he does dong style better than anybody else, is Joey Ryan.
Hey, woo! Welcome.
Thank you guys for having me.
Thank you for being here. Dorina, you're just asking how we met.
Yes, because you guys are actually friends, right?
Yeah. What's crazy is I've known him for way less time than I've known Roka, but apparently John and I aren't friends, but Joey and I are.
Way there,
you're not there yet, is what Roka
said. I think we're really close, though.
Yeah, but you guys seem to be there. So how did you guys meet?
What happened?
How do I even start? So the internet's weird. There's things on YouTube and things that get popular and things that have a following that you might not expect. And one of them is board games, which is a big market. And board game reviews on YouTube apparently is a thing. And wow. We were both hired to
host. He's been
doing
it for a while, though. Like, there's this company, Draft House. Remember, I went to Portland, and you'd been already working for the company. And then, I don't know, they found Collider Live, and they brought me on, and we started talking about board games together.
Yeah. We just reviewed some. We played some games and then reviewed them.
But when we were doing that, I was just so fascinated by Joey's story. Like, I probably asked him 4,000 questions about his penis, just in general, because you guys know me. I can't hear something and then not ask, like, a bajillion follow-up
especially
questions.
Especially about penises, yeah.
Definitely, especially about penises, but also about wrestling, because you know I'm on, like, the outskirts of being – you're a diehard wrestling fan. I'm on the outskirts where a lot of my friends are wrestlers or in the world, but I had never heard of what you do, which is just, like, the most mind-blowing thing. Take us back. Like, so I tell everybody you wrestle with your penis. Is that an accurate way of describing what happens?
I use my penis, yes, when I do wrestle. I guess it just depends on, you know, who you're talking to and who and how they will envision that. Because I'm not, like, wrestling penises, you know, like I'm wrestling and using my penis. So I was on a YouTube show called Being the Elite, which is the Young Bucks and Cody Rhodes.
Yeah, man.
They coined me the famous dick wrestler. And that kind of stuck. So that's.
Do you not like that, or you?
No, I do. I do. It's great for T-shirt marketing.
I feel like that's how you think about everything. Like, does this work for my brand and my marketing? It's less about what you're actually doing, more like, is this going to sell? Is this going to make me have a better career?
Yeah, wrestling is just a commercial for my T-shirts.
I don't mean it like that, but I just mean I think you've been. I think you've been really smart about it. Like, what you've picked to be your finisher is something that you could do theoretically forever.
Yeah. Yeah, it gets creepier the older I get, but.
Is that true? It might get funnier.
How long have you been doing it for now?
The first one was in November 2015.
Yeah. Okay.
And there's been a lot of controversy about it since. John, you were telling me that some of the people...
Yeah. See, I've been a fan of Joey for a while, ever since I saw that, and then I saw the shit you took for it from pro wrestling fans. I was, like, out of my mind about it because the whole premise of pro wrestling is not real, and it's fun, and creating characters and crazy moves, and the fact that you came up with something that was taboo for a long time, this idea of touching the genitals or the private parts. When you're trained for a professional wrestler, like, you're trained not to hit those parts on purpose, to use it to turn it around as a finisher, I thought was brilliant, especially at the time when the society was opening up to be more open to the idea of talking about sex and sexuality and all this kind of stuff. It just made sense. So I never understood. And Cornette, some of the old guys, they always go crazy about it. But Joey, to his credit, is always a class act when he's responding to it.
Wrestling fans always think the wrestling they grew up with is the best.
Yeah.
And that everything has gone downhill since. So anything that's changing or different, they don't like and they resist, especially the older guard.
Yeah.
You had a wrestler in Japan who pitched this to you, right?
Yes, yeah. It wasn't even my idea.
Yeah.
I stood on the shoulders of giants. I was wrestling in Japan for DDT Pro Wrestling, and I was wrestling a character who... And, like, the political correctness in Japan's a little bit different. Mm-hmm. So he plays a gay character, but he's very over the top about it. And one of the things he does is he grabs his opponents by the junk. And when they're freaking out, he, like, flips them or suplexes them or throws them. But he wrestles Japanese wrestlers all the time. So he pitched to me when the first time we wrestled in his broken English. He says, maybe I grab, but maybe you no sell, meaning I don't react, because American cock is so big and so strong.
I can neither confirm nor deny about American cock. Did you think about saying no? Like, I don't want to do that because what the hell is that? Or were you like, yeah, for sure, let's do that where my cock is big and strong?
Yeah, you know, the guy who I was wrestling, he's pretty popular in Japan. And, you know, he's very creative with his wrestling. So I trusted his instinct. And then, you know, he came up with the idea where I would instead turn him and flip him with it rather than him flipping me by it. So, and then when I watch, I'm pretty self-critical when I watch my stuff. Mm-hmm. And I watched that match back and, you know, I laughed at that part. So, I thought, okay, screw it. I'll cut that 27 seconds out and throw it up on Twitter. And like, I posted it and like came back an hour or two later and it was everywhere. And like,
did that freak you out?
It was, I mean, there's no manual of like what to do when your video goes viral.
Yeah.
You just kind of got to roll with it. Yeah, it was just, and then it was crazy because then like all these like news sites started picking it up, and then it was on Tosh.0, and it was on The Soup, and it was on ESPN, mm-hmm. and it was on Stephen Colbert. It was just like everywhere, and like that's just crazy.
That Vice covered it, for God's sakes. Yeah. Vice is covering like world issues and global corruption yeah. and stuff, and here they are covering this situation. I thought it was genius, and I have to say, I think there's a little bit of jealousy to the backlash, too, because, like, you're a guy who's – you trained, you're seasoned, you've started federations. Like, you have a history in pro wrestling. You're not some guy who came along as a journeyman and stumbled on something. Like, this came to you, you took advantage of it, and you clipped it out not knowing what it was going to do. It blew up like crazy, and then people come after you. I think there has to be a little bit of jealousy because, like, you weren't in your 20s when this happened, right? Like, you were a seasoned wrestler in your 30s, so you grab this situation and run with it. Why not?
Yeah, I mean, the first one was in 2015.
Right.
I started wrestling in 2000, so 15 years in. But there might be jealousy. I mean, that's just the way wrestling is. Or, you know, any kind of entertainment, there's always a bit of that. There's always a bit of, right. Like, we don't want our friends to do better than us, you know, as Morrissey would say.
Or why did it happen to him and not to me? Why did he figure it out? Yeah.
Right. You know, it's one of those things where supportive of our friends until they start to like get more popular than us, and then we want to hold on to our spots.
Does it ultimately end up opening more doors for you or closing more doors for you that you become the penis guy? Because obviously that means that you can't wrestle some places, but you're becoming really popular with a certain crowd.
It definitely opened more doors for me. I mean, it closed maybe one or two real big ones, but the fact that I can do this independently and be my own boss and make my own schedule. And like, I mean, that's the goal of just about every career in the world is to be your own boss and set your own rules. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I do. So in that sense, it's been very, you know, good for me, very great for me. You know, and then different opportunities coming up from it, like, you know, the mainstream crossover, which a lot of wrestling fans don't understand, is that like my audience isn't the hardcore wrestling. I mean, it is. There's wrestling fans that love me, but it's like all these people who don't live and breathe and die wrestling. They just want to be entertained and they think it's funny. They don't think I'm hurting the tradition of pro wrestling. So I do have a big mainstream following, and that like I was cast on the first season of Glow. It was to play a wrestler, but you know, I had a role on Glow because those producers had seen me wrestle and they were entertained by it. So it does open more doors for me. But yeah, it does maybe close one or two big ones.
So your penis got you on Netflix, basically. Good for
you. Yeah. So, multiple times. They just released Magic for Humans season 2 and I'm in an episode of that.
Oh, good nice. For you. So have you always, is this what you always wanted to do? Like, when did you get interested in wrestling, as a kid, or how did you get into this?
I grew up with 3 older brothers. So I started watching wrestling pretty young. And you know, so I was a fan through most of my life. I mean, I lost interest a little bit in like maybe the early 90s, but then like that WWE's Attitude Era and like ECW, they kind of made it cool again. So I started watching again, and I just had friends that were fans too. And after high school, we were in college, and I was like undeclared major. I didn't know what I wanted to do, and then one of my friends suggested, he saw the advertisement for a wrestling school. He's like, this promotion trains wrestlers. I want to try it, but you know, he didn't want to do it alone. So he talked me and my other friend into going, and the other friend actually he signed up, but he never actually went. And then me and him started training together, and he went for about a year before he stopped, and I just kept going.
Wow.
But as somebody who you said you grew up on it, and then you go and you train, these two big doors that closed for you are probably doors that you looked up to growing up, or at least one of them, something that you wanted to be a part of. Is that ever been a concern for you, or something that you thought of, like, okay, maybe I do want to pivot at some point, or is that off the table now?
Yeah, it feels like, you know, a lot of times it's like, you know, any job, anything you do, any performance can get kind of tedious. And, you know, I feel like sometimes I'm like, oh, I'm tired of being the dick guy. But but I think it would be irresponsible for me to, like, to alter it, because it does have such a fan following. And what I learned is that, you know, I have a fan base that doesn't want me to go to the bigger places, because they know that this character is going to cease to exist.
It's going to homogenize you, man.
Yeah. And they want this character. They love this character. So, you know, I of course, yes, you know, having a WrestleMania moment in my life might be nice, but I've accepted and am happy with the way things are going.
You had some big moments at the AEW, the most recent, the AEW pay-per-views, when they first exploded out the bound, all the stuff they did. When you came out, man, that pop was insane. So, maybe you won't have the WrestleMania moment, but you're still having these great moments in these federations that, like, love wrestlers like you, you know? There must be some, at least, satisfaction for you in that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that All In pay-per-view. I wasn't advertised or anything. I was a surprise. And the fact that, like, those 10,000 people were chanting for me it gave me goosebumps. Yeah. You know, and I, like, teared up while I was in the ring and it was happening. That creating moments like that is very fun.
Yeah.
I know I've already asked you a ton of penis questions, but I have more because that's my job. When you were coming in, I said to Darina, like, dude, because we were watching footage of you, and I was like, he does not get a boner while he's doing this. I know that's a crazy thing to say out loud, and you guys at home are going to dick on me for it, pun intended.
Nice.
But, like, how do you do that? You do a lot of stuff, men, women. I mean, everybody's touching your dick. How are you, like, chill out? Don't go anywhere, penis.
And has it ever happened? And, like, now it happens less because you're so, or is it because you have the adrenaline going on? Like, what's going on?
My penis is very professional. I think it's just a different mindset, you know. Like, I'm not. I don't sexualize wrestling, and I don't think about it as, you know, as a device or whatever. So my mind is not in the right place to get an erection. I got to be careful too, because I can't, as the character in wrestling, I can't over sexualize what I'm doing, even though I'm using a sex organ. Mm-hmm. I can't over sexualize it, because then it becomes, there's like a different level. If I'm just doing it because it has power and it hurts my opponents and I'm trying to win the match, then it's still in the context of pro wrestling. But if I sexualize it or make it like some sort of reason to get off, then it completely changes like what the goal or the accomplishment is.
Or your character even.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what's great. For the audience, you know, the audience can laugh, you know, if it's just funny, if it's just like I'm using it like a prop.
Yeah.
But as soon as I sexualize it, some people might get awkward about it and mm-hmm. weird.
That's what was great about, was it Sienna that you guys did that whole the public service announcement for? I was showing them before we came. I was just brilliant. Like, that moment when it was hitting the peak of people being upset about it and thinking it was a sexual thing and it was inappropriate, and you had her do the public service announcement and you still beat her, but I thought it was genius to address it head on. Who came up with that, I guess?
Oh, sir. That was her. You know, one of the blessings of this character is that it's so unique to me. So when people find out that we're wrestling or I'm booked with somebody, they start coming up with ideas, because this is the one and only time they're going to get to do a penis-centric match, you know? So, like, that, you know, like, so I get to a show and, you know, I find the person I'm wrestling and we go to talk and... you know, they said, when I found out I was wrestling you, I came up with all these penis ideas, and they start shooting. And I'm like, yeah, let's do them all, you know, because, like, you know, I get that, like, I'm the one guy they can do this with and they can let loose and have a little fun with.
Have you thought at all, because like you just said, you can't sexualize it, but even when you started it, you said 2015 was the first time.
Yeah.
Now it's 2019. I mean, with all the Me Too and things that have gone on, just we're in such a different state than we were even a few years ago.
Yeah.
Has that come up in any way, like doing things like the PSA, or has anybody been like, no, I don't want to wrestle with you, you're the penis dude?
No, I really haven't had any issues wrestling anybody. You know, I think if you're in wrestling and you're, you know, and you want to succeed or you want to be, or you want to, your goal is to please the audience. The first time I wrestled Cody Rhodes, I suspected that he wasn't going to want to do it. You know, he's the son of Dusty Rhodes and he just came out of his WWE contract and, you know, and I suspected that, you know, might be against it. But he said, he told me, he's like, we have to do it because the audience wants it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that a lot of wrestlers understand that the audience wants to see it, so they want to pay it off.
Do you like what he's building with AEW? Do you think this is actually going to be something that comes to the WCW level and like really goes at the WWE, like back in the Monday Night Wars?
Those guys are all my friends, and I love them to death. I'm happy for the industry because now there's options, and now there's, you know, bidding for talent.
Right.
The talent rates go up.
Does that affect you?
It affects me on the independent level because a lot of these guys are now under exclusive contracts. So there's not as many name independent guys on the scene. So it gets me more offers, which can up my rate as well. So it affects the whole industry. Everything trickles down from the top. So I like that. I like what it's doing for the industry.
Can I ask one? Who's the favorite person you've ever flipped with your dick?
Oh, jeez.
Is there one person that like you were like, I can't believe they did it?
Mick Foley, maybe?
Yeah!
Foley. Nice.
Yeah. Awesome. Really
basically, because he pitched the idea to me.
Like, right.
We were on the same show. We weren't booked in anything together. And the promoter, it was in Ireland, and the promoter
That's awesome.
Said, hey, Mick's in this room over here. He wants to talk to you. And so I went in there, and as soon as I got there, he's like, Mick's like, okay, I got this idea. And he like, starts calling my spot to me. And then afterwards, he's like, is that okay? And I was like, yeah, whatever you want to do.
Is there anybody that you haven't flipped with your dick yet that you're like, oh, my God, they're on my dick flip bucket list?
Good.
I don't know. I'd have to think about it. I mean, I've done some major stars in wrestling, some Hall of Famers. And, you know, and it's always cool when they want to play along with it and they want to, you know, let me get the character over. I try not to think about like too much to like necessarily have dream matches or dream moments, but you know I've been blessed with the amount of people who have done it.
Can you think of though right now like your best and your worst match?
Oh,
so far,
yeah. Well, my best match was probably prior to the penis stuff starting. It was me and Candice LeRae, who's I'm wearing the shirt of today. She's in NXT.
She's awesome. NXT.
She's in NXT now.
She's your bestie, right?
Yeah. She was the best man at my wedding.
Nice.
And we were an intergender tag team, which was kind of different at the time. It's more a little bit more. You know, people use it more now. And we wrestled the Young Bucks and. It was at Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, and it was a guerrilla warfare match, which is a hardcore match, weapons and stuff. And that people, that was 2014, I want to say, and people still like talk about it today. So that's probably my most well-known match, which kind of makes it my favorite, especially because I was with all my friends.
Mm-hmm.
My worst match, I mean. I've had a couple.
Why are you laughing? What
because,
don't we know?
Because there's some pro wrestlers hate talking about their worst matches, so it's like
I don't want to name anybody.
Yeah,
or like,
consult the
know,
other person. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's all about the chemistry you have in the ring.
Oh, because worst match would mean that the other person.
Right, it could be like people could look at it.
I mean, it could be my fault too,
right, exactly.
Or it could just be like a bad mesh. Right. You know,
because you said you look back at your stuff and you're very critical of what you do. Is there been a time that you look back that you watched and you were like, wow, I just nailed that. That's the thing that I'm most proud of. Is it that Candice one?
There might be that one. I mean, there's a few of that, a few of those that are moments I'm proud of. You know, I don't hate everything I do. You know, I'm not too hard on myself, but I always think that stuff could be better. You know?
Somebody in the chat, Cino Hour, says that flip Vince McMahon, please.
that would be wild, man.
It would never, ever happen.
Yeah.
I think Vince never said ever.
Right. Well, I mean, I was told that when the clip was going viral, that, you know, obviously it hit the WWE locker room.
Right, I'm sure.
They said, like, everybody was, like, laughing about it and talking about it. And Vince McMahon, too, was laughing, laughing about it.
Have you met him?
Yes.
He used to be a developmental, right?
No. I've done some extra work in some dark matches for WWE. Right,
yeah.
But never under contract.
How is he?
He's intimidating. And, I mean, he's not unapproachable, but you still are kind of on eggshells around him.
Wow.
Who was the guy for you growing up? Because you watched
Hulk Hogan. For sure.
That's number one, son.
Hulk Hogan.
Yeah. What? You too?
Oh, yeah. Of course. That's what I was going to say.
Mean, I'm a child of the 80s, so.
You got to flip Hogan one day. Yeah. If he ever leaves the WWE and goes independent, you got to flip him.
I don't know if his hip can take it.
Yeah, fair.
That's
fair.
True.
But then again, Foley had hip replacement surgery when I did it to him.
I think Hogan could take it.
Yeah. Do you get nervous being with some of the legends? Like, what happens if they get incredibly hurt while you're penis flipping?
I mean, it's a pretty safe move. It would have to be something very, very something would have to go wrong, I guess, or someone like some. It would have to be some pre-existing reason that, you know, like they. But I don't think just doing a somersault is going to hurt too many wrestlers.
You were just telling me you have a bunch of shows coming up. I mean, I feel like every time I talk to you, you are not in Los Angeles. You're gone all the time. But what do you have this coming week?
This week, I'm on tonight, actually. This is airing live, I assume, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tonight, I'm on Impact Wrestling on Access TV, which is the company I work for now. Or the television company. I'm still independent. Like, I'm not exclusive to them, but they're the major company that I'm, contracted to, yeah. So they're on Access TV at 8 o'clock, and I'm on tonight's episode. Actually, I'm doing something non-wrestling, but it's pretty funny.
What does that mean?
I'm doing more like a skit. Mm. I'm doing this storyline where this other wrestler who does like an 80s throwback kind of character, he wanted to start a clique and like have us like take over the scene and like take all the money for ourselves and just wrestle each other. And so he asked for my help, and I agreed to it. But then when he needed my help, I wasn't there for him. So
bastard.
Yeah. And so this week tonight is his receipt for me, I guess, is mm-hmm.
What's that, like payback?
Yeah. And it's a very fun segment that we did it's pretty clever. It's probably maybe the most well written segment I've ever been in wrestling.
Wow.
Yeah, it's very fun. That's airing tonight on Access TV at 8 o'clock. And then Wednesday, tomorrow, I go to Vegas for a show, and I just we're driving up and driving right back, because Thursday evening I fly to England for three shows. Well, Friday's in Wales, Saturday and Sunday are in England. Then I fly home Monday, and then I'm home Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then Thursday I go to Kansas for a show.
Three full days. Yay.
Yeah, three full days at home.
This is a dumbass question.
Well, not full days, because I land Monday morning.
Are you exhausted?
You know, but I've gotten really good at sleeping on planes.
That's true. We flew together and back, and he passed out the whole time.
Yeah.
I had nobody to talk to.
Aw. I can't help it. It's like a baby in a car, you know, like as soon as the engine revs, I'm done.
Like when Joey gets in the plane, he knows I'm done. That's great.
I lost my train of thought.
I honestly don't even know. I think I just asked if you were exhausted and you said yes.
Yeah, you know, I mean, but it's, I always think whenever I'm like at my wit's end, I think about all the wrestlers that would love to be in the position I am and have the success I have. And then also all the, I mean, maybe I have to get up for 3 or 4 7 a.m. flights a week, but that's better to me. That's better than having to get up at 7 a.m. to go sit in a cubicle for 8 hours. Mm-hmm. You know, so like I think about all the other jobs, and I don't. Mine's not so bad.
Okay, well, that's all the time we have with you, Joey Ryan. Oh. But also, I know that you've got merch that you're selling and all that stuff. So where can everybody keep up with you and figure out where they can get all your dong shirts?
Well, yeah. So Twitter, I'm at Joey Ryan Online. Instagram, I'm at Joey Ryan.
It'd be cool if you were just at Joey.
Yeah, that'd be great. That'd be like Billy Corgan style. Well, on Twitter, at Joey Ryan is taken by some singer-songwriter, so that we get he probably gets a lot of tweets he doesn't really need about penises.
Oh, my God. Probably so, very confusing.
Yeah,
he's figured it out by now.
But I beat him to Instagram. So Instagram, I'm at Joey Ryan. And then my T-shirts are at prowrestlingtees.com/Joey Ryan.
Good website.
And thank you to Darina, to John Rocha.
Thank you.
To Cody Hall, Mark Riley. Alex, we missed you today. Joey Ryan again one more time.
Thank you. Thanks,
thanks
guys.
So thanks much for being here, guys. We'll be back tomorrow morning for Collider Live.
I'm going to go get flipped.
Napa know-how. Get all the quality parts you need at your locally owned Napa. Because right now, when you order from Napa online, you can pick up curbside at your local store in just 30 minutes. Or get your order delivered direct to your door with free one-day shipping on over 160,000 quality parts when you spend $35 or more. Quality parts, delivered quickly and safely. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating stores, standard ground shipping and exclusions apply.
Stay little Chico Pitbull, Mr. 305, better said Mr. Worldwide, and I'm here to tell you about my new podcast, From Negative to Positive, brought to you by my friends over at State Farm. I believe that to have success, you got to play the game, so that the game doesn't play you. You know, the biggest risk you take is not taking one. It's very important that you make sure that you make the most out of your money, especially when it comes to insurance. State Farm offers surprisingly great rates. They have great agents standing by helping you personalize your coverage. All this is backed up by award-winning, easy-to-use technology. It's a great price with an even greater service. When you want the real deal, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.